gas liquids, carbon dioxide, essentially any and all oil and gas related products that move by pipeline. We do that by participating in the regulatory arena, particularly with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, on matters that affect the 17 interstate pipelines that either operate in Wyoming or proximate to Wyoming and have an impact directly on us. And we also operate in the commercial arena, where we assist those who are looking for access to pipelines to understand how they can get their products out, issues that they need to address, and for those who want to build facilities in Wyoming and want to access products off those pipelines for their manufacturing purposes. We help them understand, if you locate here, these are your options. We assist those sorts of folks by going with them to meetings with pipelines to help translate pipeline language into English for them. And so address things both regulatorily arena and commercial. Two recent examples of that this year. There is a pipeline that runs from the Powder River Basin down to the Cheyenne Hub. It's called Wyoming Interstate Company, or WIC. It's a FERC regulated pipeline.
Could you pull the mic closer? Thank you.
How's that?
Good, better.
So the pipeline is regulated by the FERC, and it is the way that you move gas out of the Powder River Basin to the Cheyenne Hub, and it gets into the grid for the rest of the world. That pipeline can move 1.4 billion cubic feet a day of gas out of the Powder River Basin, and that reflects the heyday of the Powder River Basin, and particularly coal bed methane. Volumes on that pipeline now run about 400 million a day. Nonetheless, of that 1.4 billion a day capacity, 900 million of it is under contract. Pipeline contracts are like take or pay airline tickets. You pay for that space every day, whether you use it or not. So the pipeline is got plenty of capacity to move the actual gas needed, but it's contracted well in excess of needs. The difference between a pipeline contract, though, and a non-refundable airline ticket is you can resell that space. Or you can, you know, move someone else's gas under that space. And so owing to the fact that the rates on the pipeline charged by the pipeline for any new shipper reflect historical volumes of 1.4 back when the rates were last set, and the interaction of the secondary market of those people holding firm capacity for which they have no gas to put in, you have a very low cost to move gas from the Powder River Basin to the Cheyenne Hub. So that's a wonderful thing for the state of Wyoming. It's good for the producers in the Powder River Basin. It's good for prices. It's good for severance taxes and royalties and ad valorem taxes. The WIC pipeline system serves other parts of the Rocky Mountain region other than just the Powder River Basin. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission took it upon itself to initiate a review of Wyoming Interstate Company's rates because they thought they were over-recovering in other parts of the system. That set up an opportunity to have a discussion about what rates would be in the future, particularly out of the Powder River Basin. Most rate cases don't get litigated to completion. They go through a settlement process that ultimately generates an agreement that is approved by the FERC Commission, and you move on. Wyoming Interstate Company suggested a minor reduction in rates elsewhere on the system, a preservation of rates out of the Powder River Basin, with a promise not to come back for a rate case until August of 2019. That's a really critical date. That's the date nearly all of those 900 million a day contracts would expire. Rates are set by taking the cost to run the system, dividing it by the usage. So it's a fraction, not the numerator being cost to run it on an annual basis, which is depreciation, return on equity, and debt service divided by imputed volumes. We won't have a denominator of $1.4 billion a day in the future. At that point in 2019, this is something the Pipeline Authority recognized, the firm capacity under contract will only be $100 million a day. You have the horrifying prospect of that denominator changing so dramatically as to drive the rates to uncompetitive rates for the Powder River Basin and making production out of the Powder River Basin all the more problematic, reducing prices and reducing tax revenues. Initially, the FERC was willing to go along with the FERC trial staff was happy to go along with the suggested date of August 2019 because it was, you know, a few years out in the future, and they did not capture the significance of the date. But the Pipeline Authority tracks contract expirations. We brought the matter up, we held out, and we managed to get a 17-month extension on that rate moratorium. And so in a transmittal letter we sent to the committee, we identified, depending on what rates could have been, which is an unknown because the denominator is going to be a heavily argued point when the time comes, we believe we, for that mere 17-month interval, are going to save Powder River Basin producers between $14 and $134 million in transportation costs. And those transportation costs come right out of the price of the gas against which severance taxes and royalties are calculated. And if you use a rough number of about 16% of the price comes back to the state and its counties when you calculate severance, ad valorem, state share of federal royalties and state royalties and apply it to the mix of land use out there, you get about a 16% total economic interest. So 16% times the producer savings is how we generated what we believe we have kept from losing for the state between $2 and $21 million over that 17 months because we recognized the significance of the date and have credibility with the FERC on behalf of the state to argue for things that others would not have argued. So that's the example of the regulatory arena. We covered another issue in the transmittal letter, which is Jordan Cove, LNG export terminal proposed on the coast of Oregon. That facility, when it's built, and hopefully it will be built, will consume 1 billion cubic feet a day of gas for export to Pacific Rim locations. If you add up the current average daily demand of Washington, Oregon, and California, it's essentially 8 billion cubic feet per day. There's seasonality that goes with any given day of the year, but average day for the year is 8 BCF a day. That's a 12.5% potential increase in market to the west of us. The state of Wyoming and other producing states in the Rockies are under a lot of pressure for moving gas to the east and the Midwest owing to growing production in Pennsylvania and Ohio. To the west is where we have a geographic advantage. We won't be the sole state competing to sell gas into that facility. We'll be competing with Canada, but we certainly have a geographic advantage. We are directly connected to the pipeline that moves gas to the west, to the location, to the facility. And as I say, 12.5% increases in volume don't come along often. And in general, gas consumption in the west of the U.S. is declining owing to renewables. So as a matter of supporting that project, the Wyoming Pipeline Authority and the state of Wyoming through the Attorney General's office have again intervened in that proceeding. We'll be there to support them through the FERC process to point out the benefits to the state of Wyoming and to federal lands production that are associated with moving more gas out of the state and to the west. We have sat down with the chairman of Jordan Cove and extended an invitation to arrange any sort of meeting that they would like between their customers in the Pacific Rim who would like to come to Wyoming and visit with whether it's the Oil and Gas Commission, the state geologist, the University of Wyoming, whomever, to help them understand the abundance of competitively priced natural gas there is in Wyoming, to help them make decisions to support that project as customers and to source that gas out of Wyoming.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Jeffries. Can you repeat for me, I didn't get it written down, tell me more about the Oregon Hub and the names that you've thrown out. I apologize, I'm not up to speed on all of this, so if you don't mind.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Landon, so the name of the facility is Jordan Cove. It's located on the coast of Oregon in the vicinity of Coos Bay, C-O-O-S. It is a facility that will liquefy natural gas taken off the pipeline grid. You chill it down to minus 241 degrees Fahrenheit, and it turns to a liquid and reduces the volume, makes it reasonable to ship. That facility will be built on the coast. There will be an associated 232-mile, 36-inch diameter pipeline to connect the facility to a point on the grid called Malin, Oregon, M-A-L-I-N. It's right on the Oregon-California border, which is the terminus of a pipeline called Ruby Pipeline that originates in southwest Wyoming at the Opal Gas Processing Plant and the Pioneer Gas Processing Plant. And so that's the direct connection we have to source gas to that facility. And the owner of Jordan Cove is a 50% owner of Ruby Pipeline.
Mr. Chairman, it sounds like that might help. Thank you.
Sure.
Mr. Co-Chair, what's the timing on the FERC hearings and the process that we have to go through to get?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, so it's been a tortuous process. Actually, Jordan Cove had previously filed. The FERC found their filing deficient in the spring of this year, rejected it without prejudice. They have corrected the deficiencies, which were principally they didn't show they had enough customers yet. So they have signed up customers in the Pacific Rim. They have refiled. They believe that they will move through the certificate process at the FERC by the fall of 2018 if things go reasonably well, given that they've been down the road before and done the environmental work before. From that point on, if the commission acts reasonably expeditiously, they could get a certificate by early 2019 and probably a three-year construction horizon or so after that.
Barring lawsuits and everything else.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, there has been very significant and loud opposition to the project, which is a characteristic of almost every new interstate pipeline project, be it the West Coast, the East Coast, anywhere else. It's become far more organized and vocal, and it's a general attitude that all pipelines are bad because pipelines lead to drilling, and drilling is bad. So it's a collateral attack on oil and gas production.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And once again, Mr. Jeffries, I just would express our appreciation from the producers up in the Wind River Basin for your work previously on with Kinder Morgan to protect the ability to get that gas out of the Wind River Basin back down to the I-80 corridor. Good job on that. And then could you remind me what size that Ruby line is?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, the Ruby pipeline is a 42-inch diameter line with a current capacity of 1.5 billion cubic feet per day. It is expandable with compression up to 1.8 billion cubic feet per day. It is currently flowing on a given day between 500 and 700 million a day. So there is ample capacity in that pipeline to move incremental volumes to serve the LNG facility when it's built.
So is there's no facility at Coos Bay at this point, is there?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. This will be a grassroots facility. The building trades and the county commissioners in the Coos Bay area are very much in favor of this project, as it would obviously be a substantial kick to employment and tax base in the county.
But there's also a very strong environmental lobby out that way.
Mr. Chairman, the state of Oregon and surrounding states, aside from the Coos Bay neighborhood, find the project not in their interest.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Dockstetter.
How many people in Oregon would it employ? What's the estimate on that end of things?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dockstetter, I would have to look that up and get that answer back to you. It's a major undertaking to construct the facility. The capital cost of the LNG export terminal and associated facilities to refrigerate the gas down run into the billions of dollars. So I would expect probably into thousands of construction jobs during that phase, lesser number when in operation. But it, again, goes back to the substantial tax base that it creates as well.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Burkhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Brian, just to put it in perspective for me, the facility – size-wise compared to, say, Chenier's Sabine Pass facility?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhart, referencing the Sabine Chenier facility, that is a facility located on the Louisiana coast near Lake Charles. It is, of the moment, the only operating LNG export facility in the lower 48 states, and it has a capacity of 4 billion cubic feet per day. Each facility or train is typically a 1 billion a day capability, and they have four trains there at that location.
Thank you.
Representative Larson.
Thanks again, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Jeffries, I'm assuming that you guys, well, I know that you have been working with identifying potential routes to bring CO2 into historic in older oil fields for enhanced oil recovery. Is there any updates on routing, or, and I know that this is in a very early stage, but can you just kind of appraise us where we're at on those efforts? Have those routes kind of been identified and brought back for consideration?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, the project there we call the Wyoming Pipeline Corridor Project, and that's the project to align the corridors at individual BLM field offices with each other. Historically, they don't meet. You come to the boundary of one, and it doesn't match the corridor at the boundary of the other. So the project, we've been working with the governor's office to work through the design of the corridors. I think the project has been slowed a bit by transitions in the BLM state director's office and individuals assigned in that office to work with us, because it's a collaborative process with the BLM. So coming out of a change of administration a little over a year ago and such, the ability of the other side to work as quickly as we would like them to work with us has been handicapped a bit.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman, if I may, is there anything that we or the Federal Natural Resource Committee or anything can do to help work or move that along?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, the first thing that comes to mind, anything you could do to assure continuity in the BLM would probably be the biggest single thing.
Thank you. Let's get to your exception request.
Mr. Chairman, we have no exception requests.
So I see an exception request.
Is that the reduction? I think of exceptions as always positive numbers. I'm looking at page 13 as the page to work from.
Well, page 12.
Page 12.
Real property rental reduction?
Mr. Chairman, that is the location that we were able to deal with the reduction directed to us by the governor's office, and we did achieve a rent reduction by pleading poverty with our landlord.
Yeah, any reduction or increase are both exception requests. All right. Is there anything you want to point out on the base budget versus the standard budget?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to point out that we're an odd duck from the standpoint of the 900 series. The 900 series almost entirely represents salaries and personnel-related costs. I think we have something on the order of $23,500 in there for auditing and accounting costs. And there's, last year I think we spent $9,000 on outside attorneys. The entire rest of that amount is personnel costs. Because we are not in the state employment system, that's where our personnel costs have been set. We do not have any outside consultants. We have a great set of free consultants in the makeup of our board. I believe the last time that we paid a consultant to do something for us was 2008, when we paid Tri-Hydro $25,000 to estimate the cost of a water line out of the Powder River Basin to the North Platte. So it's a large number for professional services, but it's salaries, and it owes to that quirk that we're not in the state personnel system.
Can you get us a list of the salaries?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. We have three full-time equivalents, which is composed of two full-time and two part-time employees.
Yeah, if you can get us that list of salaries, we'd appreciate it. Any other questions? Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe a colleague had mentioned this to me, and I still am a little confounded by it. Do you do work in the oil pipeline area as well, or is it all your work related to natural gas pipelines?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Walters, we do operate in the oil as well as in natural gas liquids segments. Indeed, a few years back, maybe four or five, the name of the authority was changed from the Wyoming Natural Gas Pipeline Authority. We dropped the phrase natural gas to reflect that we do deal with oil issues. Two examples of oil issues, going back just a couple of years, an oil pipeline that operates out of southwest Wyoming and flowed in the direction of Salt Lake City wanted to change the direction of flow on the pipeline to bring condensate produced in southwest Wyoming back to Casper. They had to go to the FERC for approval for a tariff change. The refiners in Salt Lake City protested at the FERC. They like the idea of product in southwest Wyoming being captive to them. And at that point, before the FERC, you would have an argument of multi-billion-dollar pipelines feuding with multi-billion-dollar refiners, and the FERC might not have any particular sympathy either way. The Wyoming Pipeline Authority intervened in support of the change, pointing out that the benefits to the state of Wyoming, the taxpayers, and Wyoming production were material, significant, and we supported the change in the direction of the flow of the pipeline. And we like to think that that tipped the scale between billion-dollar pipelines and billion-dollar refiners by giving an argument that could not be presented by anyone else. In a similar type of oil case, there is a pipeline that comes down from Canada called Express. It comes into Casper. It connects to another pipeline that goes on to Wood River, Illinois. At a time when those pipelines are full, the Platte River pipeline, the one that continues to Illinois, wanted to change the rules as to when the pipeline was full, who got priority. The priority scheme they came up with would have disadvantaged Wyoming in the movement of oil from Casper to Guernsey, Wyoming, in favor of Canadian oil moving all the way from Hardisty, Alberta, to Illinois. Again, we recognize the commercial implications, protested. The plan of allocation was not allowed to change, and we did not lose our ability to move oil or encumber our ability to move oil from Casper to Guernsey.
What's the typical lifetime of an oil pipeline?
Mr. Chairman, properly maintained, there are pipelines that I know have been in service for over 50 years. It's a matter of controlling corrosion on the system, having properly installed it, properly externally coated it. You put an impressed current on the pipeline to retard corrosion, but inspect it, maintain it, and it should remain in service for well over 50 years and longer. It's a matter of diligence and operation.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Co-Chair. So with regards to the, we've had some recent oil finds on the eastern border of Wyoming, up, from Campbell County down through Laramie County. Are there prospective pipeline projects in the way? Are the production quotas sufficient enough to move forward on that, or are you looking into it? What's going on with that?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, we're sitting in a pretty good position for movement of oil pipelines in the main pathways. So wherever new production is found, you have to create a gathering system to get over to the transmission lines. But something that has worked in our favor, a lot of oil that moves through the path of in from North Dakota, down through Wyoming, and on out, coming from the Bakken, with the placement in service of Dakota Access Pipeline coming out of the Bakken, a 470,000-barrel-a-day pipeline, it has pulled barrels away from pipelines that would otherwise use that pathway through Wyoming and compete with Wyoming barrels moving out. A sign that capacity at this point is in good shape for the movement of oil. It shows up in the spot price that you see for oil at Guernsey compared to Cushing. For a large part of this summer, oil at Guernsey. traded at a premium to shipping, 50 cents to a dollar higher. If there were pipeline constraints, it would have been much lower as it had been in the past. It's higher because there's a strong refining demand for the quality of Wyoming, and local refineries have bid it up to capture it.
Anything else? Thank you, Mr. Jeffries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We will get you.
Appreciate it. Okay. Next up is the Wyoming Infrastructure Authority. Jason, welcome. Please introduce yourself for those listening on the internet.
All right. Mr. Chairman, members of the Appropriations Committee, I'm Jason Baker.
Can you pull the mic closer to
sure.
you, please?
I'm Jason
You're
Baker.
Competing with his nose over
okay.
here.
The Executive Director of the Wyoming Infrastructure Authority. Real quick, too, I'd like to introduce Sarah Young from our staff, and then also Mark Stege, who's the chairman of our board. So they're here joining us today in case there's any questions or something that
I'm having a hard time. Could you speak up or pull the mic closer or both, please?
Okay. I'll get right in there.
Oh, that's
Is that better?
Thank you.
All right. So, similarly to the Pipeline Authority, our budget is really simple, and the majority is actually Series 900. And so if you look at our budget, our 200 series, you know, basically it's our office expenses, IT, all the support services that go into making the Infrastructure Authority operate throughout the year. And the rest is Series 900. Our salaries and the vendors that we use are all Series 900. Kind of by law and actually by definition, Sarah and myself are actually contract employees of the state. So we're not technically considered state employees. But that being said, as we've gone through these series of budget reductions over the last few years, the Series 900 reductions do impact us more greatly than others, because that is where our salary pool comes from. Compared to the prior fiscal year, the enacted levels, this was prior to the various cuts and things that have that took place, we're down about 15%, which is a little bit more than I believe the state average is 12%. And we certainly understand the fiscal situation the state is in. But, you know, we like to think that for the cost of the agency and our activities, that there is a really good return on investment for the state. Because, you know, really that's how we look at things, is for every dollar that we spend, what is the value to Wyoming? And if you look at our list of Series 900 expenditures, we don't have a lot, you know. As we've encountered those budget reductions, the Series 900 is really the only place that we had or we could go. But again this year, one of our largest, or actually the largest expenditure that we have that we think brings great value to the state, is our partnership with the Energy Policy Network. And so for those who are not familiar with that, that organization is going out and they're on the ground, active in these Powder River Basin coal customer states. You know, so when the Missouri Public Service Commission is looking at a rate case, you know, shutting down some coal plants, they're in there advocating for continuing the use of those tons and making those economic cases, you know, and they're really active in these customer states that have a serious impact to Wyoming's budget. So looking through that, and there is one handout there, it's titled Coal Tax Impacts. And our we funded it was $250,000 membership, or I guess our partnership with Energy Policy Network. We paid $100,000 of that out of our budget, $150,000 the governor's office felt it warranted. But specifically, when you look at those things, Arkansas was a focus for this year. And every ton of coal that is saved when you look just specifically at the production tax credits, not sales taxes on equipment, you know, ad valorem property, anything like that, but just the production taxes. For coal valued at about $12 a ton, it's $2.34 for Wyoming. And so, as I mentioned, Arkansas was a major focus, and they have two very large coal-fired power plants that under the previous presidential administration, EPA sued, and they were slated to close. EPA came in, worked with the state legislators, really pushed the importance to the economy and the state of that, and able to renegotiate a new agreement that extended the life of both of those plants. And so when you look at the 8.3 million tons of PRB coal that those two plants collectively burn, that equates to about 4.15 million in one-time lease bonus monies, and about 19.5 million from taxes, including royalties, severance taxes, AML, gross proceeds, everything. So with the new EPA agreements, those plants were extended, I think, 8 years and 4 years collectively, and that saved $185 million in tax revenue to the state by keeping just those two plants open. EPN has done some other activities in Louisiana, Nebraska, Texas, and we've compiled some of those figures as well. But, you know, and a lot of this math is sort of back of the envelope math because you don't know exactly what contracted price. And so we use $12 as a comfortable average, but we feel that $250,000 investment saved about $78.8 million in annual tax revenue to the state. So I think that's a pretty good return on investment and something that we would like to continue to do, but we'll figure out ways to make that happen. Along the lines, you know, with that Arkansas focus, we brought a group out to the state, group of legislators in July. Mr. Chairman, Senator Driscoll was kind enough to host the group at his ranch, and Representative Barlow hosted one of the other evenings. And I think there was eight Arkansas legislators who had a chance to tour, you know, Dry Fork Power Station, a coal mine, the Integrated Test Center, you know, really look and understand where their energy was coming from and how this all fit in. And, you know, we like to think that that helped gain that political support when it came time to repetition the EPA on these plants. Another one of our big projects, and actually our biggest project, is the management and administration of the Integrated Test Center project. While it is completely separately funded, We do manage that project, and our WAA staff time and travel are paid for out of our budget. Currently, we're developing the operations plan, outlining how these various functions will be managed, including technical assistance for projects coming in and that we want to come in, because they will need help calculating, you know, in-kind contributions, putting together their grant applications, understanding the technical aspects of the ITC. But also things like insurance, you know, permitting with DEQ, finance, the accounting side of things, legal. Right now we have 16 separate MOUs and different legal contracts between WIA and these various entities. Since the ITC is not a legal entity, it can't actually hold contracts, so we hold and negotiate all of those. So, it's a pretty large project, and we spend a lot of time on those things. One of the things moving forward as construction closes this year, and really we're probably within 45 days of construction being completely finished, just wrapping up some minor things. But the business development aspect of this is going to be really important to ensure that the facility is fully utilized. I don't think we misjudged, but I think as we were moving forward with the ITC, we may have underestimated the amount of time and effort that was going to have to go into pursuing projects. You know, I think maybe there was this idea that we will build it and we're going to have this one of a kind and they're just going to come for us or come to us. It's true to a point, but when you're looking at scaling up to a 20 megawatt pilot project, a scale up is $2 to $3 million per megawatt. So, you know, a large test bay project up there could cost $50-60 million fairly easily. So, we're having to be a little bit creative on how we package our in-kind contributions and going out there and making the business case, making the value proposition that testing in Gillette at the Integrated Test Center is the right place. And we've made some great, good inroads, but it's something that we will need to continue to do until that reputation is built up. You know, as we all know, the federal government plays a huge role, and, you know, the approaches to energy today couldn't be more different than they were 12 months ago. You know, and in essence, the 2016 elections moved Wyoming from a position of defense to one of really of offense. And when we look at Department of Energy, you know, their approach to funding projects is completely different as well. You know, it's a move away from technology development that supports environmental objectives to one that is pushing technology to improve efficiencies and economics. And so we've had to sort of pivot to with how we've positioned the ITC as a business opportunity for the state, you know, moving carbon from this perceived environmental liability to an asset. And we've had good success there as well. But again, that financing is the single largest challenge to utilizing the facility and attracting large industrial and commercial projects to the state. And so our board, looking at our strategic plan for the next year, is really looking at these financing mechanisms. You know, we understand, you know, business council and others are looking at that as well, but, you know, we really want to sort of laser focus in on large project development. You know, a couple of the activities that we've done is, you know, we attended a carbon sequestration leadership forum financing roundtable, just kind of a mouthful, but that group was the U.S. group that, I guess, or the group that compiled the United States comments to the latest or the most recent global talks in Doha that occurred 10 days ago. So, you know, we were able to come in and talk about things from like Wyoming perspective, you know, why this is important and what we want to see moving forward. We attended XPRIZE Investor Summit in New York City, which brought these teams that will be moving onto the site together with investors. We've had some discussions outlining, you know, what an investment vehicle might look for sovereign wealth funds. One of the comments that has been out there is like, well, why doesn't the state invest in these funds? We've had a chance to sit down to Treasurer Gordon and not really ask him for anything. It was more to educate ourselves. It's like, okay, we do have these sovereign wealth funds. What could we do? And, you know, the thought that or the avenue that we're exploring now is, well, could we work with an investment bank to create a carbon fund that the state of Wyoming, you know, North Dakota, Alaska, you know, even Saudi Arabia, these fossil energy intensive states could then invest in, and then that fund would be used down the road. So instead of trying to, it might be easier to create something from scratch like that as opposed to change Wyoming law to allow them to do direct investment, which I don't think is an approach that anybody is super comfortable with. And then kind of our lastly, in October, we held a conference in Jackson and it really was focused on financing of these projects. And at that time, we announced an agreement with the organizations called the Center for Carbon Removal, but the initiative's called the Carbon Recycling Labs. And what that is doing is setting up kind of a business incubator for these carbon utilization technology companies. And kind of the first target group are these XPRIZE semifinalists that don't make the final round. And so what the Carbon Recycling Labs wants to do is go to these companies, these I guess there'll be seven teams that don't make the final cut, and go and look at it. Why weren't you ready? Why didn't you make the finals? You know, was it a financing issue? Was it a technology issue? Was it a marketing issue? Those sort of things, provide them the resources to repackage that and then take the next steps. And so, you know, what we really want to do is fill this technology pipeline to ensure the ITC is always utilized and always has people there ready to test. In thinking larger too with this Carbon Recycling Labs project is what can we do to attract those teams and those companies to set up shop here in the state. And, you know, as we've moved through these projects and this process, had a chance to visit with a lot of, you know, investors, kind of from the Bay Area of California, people who've made millions, if not billions, in the high tech industry, and now they're looking at other things to get involved with. And a very common comment that I receive is people don't move to the Bay Area of California because it's low taxes and salaries are cheap and, you know, it's a really inexpensive place to live. People are coming there to set up their high-tech businesses because it's where the brain power is. It's where the knowledge base is. They know that if they've got something that needs some assistance and needs a boost, that's where you go. When you look at carbon economy, carbon utilization, you know, capture technologies, that whole thing, there isn't a place that you can point to on the map and says, that's where we're going to go. And really, that's what we want to create. And that, you know, attract a few of those big projects, these big pilot scale facilities to the state. And then all of a sudden people go, okay, if you want to test carbon, you come to Wyoming. And so looking at, you know, what we have at the university, you know, the business council, the ITC, you know, some of the other initiatives going on in the counties, and just thinking about what can we do to make this the most attractive, the most logical place for these teams to eventually come test and set up shop. So, you know, as we're looking forward to 2018 in our budget, you know, one of our biggest priorities is that Wyoming establishes a presence and stays engaged. You know, there are more and more entities chasing a limited amount of money. And one thing that I've recognized is, like, if Wyoming isn't present, they're not a part of the discussion. You know, we've really worked hard to develop a strong relationship with the Department of Energy. And actually next month, we have a meeting set up with the new Assistant Secretary of Fossil Energy to discuss, you know, some opportunities. But as we look at kind of what other states have done, you know, notably Texas and North Dakota, they are incredibly engaged. You know, they are at everything that I go to, and usually it's two or three people. And so, you know, I know we're not in a position to staff up and create the entities, you know, like EERC in North Dakota, or kind of an offshoot of the Texas Railroad Commission that's really actively pursuing these technologies. But at the bare minimum, we want to be engaged and be involved and be at the table. So, you know, the success of Petronova in Texas, you know, they received, I think it was $180 million of federal funding. Well, it's because that didn't come just at once. You know, they came from continually building those relationships and being engaged. But, you know, looking at our budget and the resources we have, this advocacy and education area is a place where we think that we can have the greatest impacts. In early November, we helped coordinate a trip where I think there was eight members of the Minerals Committee, along with Jeremiah Reiman from the governor's office, went down to Texas and toured the Petronova and Net Power projects. It gave us a really good idea of kind of the scale and the scope and those costs. And they're really great at explaining kind of their next steps, and that there could be opportunities for Wyoming to get, you know, the second version of that or other technology options. So one of the things that we want to do is continue to coordinate with the Minerals Committee and other legislative groups to identify tours to go down and see that. But vice versa, it's really important to bring people to Wyoming. You know, we think that Arkansas trip, it was a pretty minimal cost, but it was really successful. You know, people, shortly after that tour, I was at some other It might have been ALEC or CSG West or something like that, given a presentation, and two of the Arkansas members sort of pulled me aside and thanked us for, you know, the hospitality and putting that on. And just yesterday, received a note from the Arkansas Energy Committee Chairman asking to do that again. And we have interest from Texas coming up as well, and so we might do something jointly together to bring those up here, to folks up there to see that. Earlier last year, we had Jay Faison, who's the president and CEO of Clear Path Foundation. Jay is a gentleman who made his millions of dollars, I think, in the home security business, but now he feels his wealth is best used to push low carbon energy projects. So we brought him out to the stage, showed him EOR facility of Devon's up near Riverton, took him over to UW-SER. And so building these coalitions of people who have the resources to carry out a project. And then this upcoming September, our PSC vice chair, Kara Brighton, informed me that the National Association of Regulatory Commissioners, which is NARUC, they're going to come to Gillette in September and build a whole day and a half around technology at ITC and coal mines and power plants. So I think Wyoming is doing a really good job of getting their name out there. You know, that we are serious about finding solutions. We're serious about being a part of the discussion. And if somebody else isn't going to lead, we're going to step up and do that. A couple other quick things that we're working on. We do have another handout here. It kind of says 2017 overview. And it talks about some of the other initiatives that we've been working on. But notably, I want to point out something. It's called the Wyoming Wind Initiative. That just went live within the last week. As we look at these large transmission projects that are on the table right now, whether it's Transwest or the stuff that Rocky Mountain Power are working on, there is a pretty strong wind component. You know, and they go hand in hand. As much as we would like to see a new coal-fired power plant built, nobody's building them, so the new transmission and wind kind of go hand in hand. And so we're doing what we can to be supportive of those projects and helping make the case that there is an opportunity and a possibility. Another one of the initiatives is Stay Strong Wyoming, and that talks, or that's focused more on coal export terminal development. Right now, there's the one project that's active is the Millennium Bulk Terminal project in Longview, Washington. Right now, it's bogged down in the courts. You know, certain permits have been denied, certain permits have been approved, and I think over the next 18 months, largely the courts will decide whether that project goes forth or not. And I know any, litigation or anything coming from Wyoming's perspective will be run through the governor's office and the AG's office as opposed to, you know, the infrastructure authority. But we are working hand in hand to kind of keep them up to date. And also, if it's appropriate, provide comments or come out there. But I guess the common tie of those types of initiatives is they are education and PR. And on that, the right-hand kind of column there of that handout, it shows the social media reach that we've obtained. And by far and away, that is the most cost-effective and easiest way to really talk about and promote what we're doing in the state. And, you know, like Twitter, you know, we reached over 100,000 people this last year. And the great thing about these types of initiatives, too, is it helps us collect, you know, a list of these interested parties. Who are the people who want to be engaged, who want to stay up to date on these things? Because then when there is a comment period, especially for I'll use the port projects, for example. Mr. Chairman, I know Senator Landon was on a trip last year when he went to Seattle, and we certainly know the other side does a very good job of getting turnout. You know, I think it was probably, 500 against 10 out there, something along those lines. So when we do have these comment periods, the other side is really good at churning out 10,000 comments or 20,000 comments, and we need to have that same sort of enthusiasm for the pro-development side. And so these initiatives help us collect those interested parties' names, and so when we do say, hey, there's a 60-day comment, we can blast that out and hopefully encourage folks to participate in that. So I guess in a nutshell, that is really our sort of activities over the last year, sort of the vision that we have carrying on for the next year, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Dockstetter.
Just as you closed out there, do you feel maybe the pro-development side is kind of in a situation of reactive when they should be proactive? Is there any way we can get out in front of that a little better?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dockstetter, we have worked really closely with that Millennium Bulk Terminal group, and thankfully their head of sort of the PR and regulatory is a woman by the name of Wendy Hutchinson, who worked for Arch Coal out of Gillette for years. Actually, she still lives in Gillette and kind of commutes back and forth. And, you know, we are constantly visiting about, well, what can we do to sort of help this? And I think everybody understood that eventually this was going to end up in the courts. You know, the port developers feel like they have gone above and beyond any other similar type of project. You know, we've done more environmental reviews. We've done more analysis. You know, we've studied coal dust coming off trains. You know, there is no justifiable regulatory reason to deny this permit. And if you're going to deny it as specifically for politics, but we understood that the environmental side, they were going to litigate regardless. And I think knowing that, that's part of the reason why in prior fiscal years, JAC had appropriated money to the Attorney General's office to participate in those lawsuits as necessary. One of the areas that we have been reaching out to a little bit, and it's difficult for a cultural reason, but we would like to see the potential Asian customers in those countries, you know, Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, to be much more vocal in saying, hey, U.S., we're allies, we're major trading partners. If we're not getting coal from you, we're getting it from China or natural gas from the Middle East. And so there's a stronger sort of economics reasons, national security reasons for us to be getting the coal from you. But unfortunately, you know, Asian communities and cultures, it's not in their nature to be as forceful. And so we try to sort of help them along. And earlier in the summer, we did see a pretty pointed letter from, I believe it was Japan, saying, you know, as we close down our nuclear and look for, you know, build new coal, we need this. And so, you know, and that international outreach, really the governor's office has kind of been the point person. I know there have been a number of legislative trips over there as well, but that's the one thing that we really tried to push is, you know, especially with the previous presidential administration, that, hey, you know, they need this energy, and if they're not going to get it from the U.S., they're going to look elsewhere.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Burke.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jason, has anyone looked at shipping coal out of the port of New Orleans? They recently upgraded and expanded their ability to ship bulk solids, and Union Pacific Railroad runs right mm-hmm. to it.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhart, really the strongest economic issue when it comes to, or the largest single issue when it comes to exporting coal is rail distance. So, you know, you can almost draw a bullseye and go, okay, if the Newcastle price, which is the international pricing benchmark out of Australia, is X amount, rail distance, you know, these are the ports at this particular time that are economic. For, I guess, the company that I'm most familiar with, currently ships coal out of, it's actually out of Montana, but it's just north of Sheridan at Spring Creek, and they ship out of Vancouver, British Columbia. So, The rail cost to get that from north of Sheridan there at Decker to Vancouver, BC alone is right about $38 to $40 a ton. And, you know, if the Newcastle price is, you know, 70, you know, Newcastle is a bituminous coal. So you've got, there's a sub-bituminous discount. There's a shipping discount. You know, you start adding these various business costs onto that. And all of a sudden that break-even point is about $50 US Newcastle. And, you know, if it costs 40 to get it there, all of a sudden you're selling coal for 10 and, you know, and so just going south, while you do have more rail competition, it's still, you know, that rail traffic issue is the single largest factor that'll determine how far we can ship coal.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. This is just kind of a big picture, and I really don't know the answer to this. Has there been any talk, you know, in the Endow and stuff about really instead of just a Wyoming infrastructure authority, a Wyoming trade authority? We can call it whatever you want, but it's really, this is really about Wyoming trade in mm-hmm. a sense. And, but there's a lot of broader issues on trade that don't involve the specific items that are in your legislation. And so I'm just curious if there's been a larger discussion about that issue of Wyoming trade and whether we have that, you know, scattered throughout government or whether we should consolidate that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Somers, you know, I think there have been a lot of discussions as they've moved through Endow, and certainly, you know, when the Minerals Committee group ventured down to Texas to look at those projects, there was time to visit, you know, about how certain things are organized and if, you know, these various entities are organized in a way that maximizes, you know, the opportunity and their mission today really aligns with what we need as opposed to, you know, say 2004 when the Infrastructure Authority was created. You know, my thought to that is, you know, there's always pros and cons. And at the end of the day, we carry out the legislative directive that, you know, has been given to us. And if, you know, the legislature is interested in, you know, expanding and doing things different or, you know, just creating an entirely different mission, you know, we will certainly, provide input into those conversations, but I think you're right. You know, at the end of the day, Wyoming is trying to move its natural resources, you know, to other states, to other countries, you know, broker those agreements, that technology. It is, truly a global, issue. So.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jason, while you were presenting, I was looking on your website to see if I could find something about the Wind Wyoming Initiative, and mm-hmm. I don't see a button. I realized you only launched it yesterday, I guess, but is there will there be something on the website for me to look at?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, that's good to know because we will link it back to our website, but it is its own standalone website. I believe it is windwyoming.com. Uh-huh. I'm getting the nod of a firm. So it is its own. There are, you know, Twitter, Facebook, those sort of, accounts that are, go along with that as well. But that is a good point that we should be sure to link these various initiatives back to our home website. So thank you.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Jason, I'm just looking at your, section 900 and it's got 100,000 to enter the energy policy network for 2017, then it's gone up to 150,000 in 2018. I just want to understand the increase and what, just walk us through a little bit what they do for us and how they benefit us.
So, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, the increase is basically knowing that this year, so a lot of the, I guess even to back up here, so a lot of the reason why the Energy Policy Network was developed was to go out there and actively push back against, I guess it was Obama-era administration, EPA, which is trying to broker these side deals to close down these coal-fired power plants. As we found with Arkansas and some of these other states, during that last year of the Obama administration, they had moved a number of agreements kind of to that very end. You know, they're trying to push through as many as they could before he left office. Fortunately for Wyoming, they didn't all make it through. And so looking forward to this next year, there is a lot of work that needs to be done to, I guess, combat those agreements before they go final. Because for, in the instance of Arkansas, the agreement to close down those power plants was negotiated during the Obama administration, and that was the law of the land. It was going to move forward, but somebody actually had to intervene earlier this year to get the new Pruitt EPA to roll that back. And so the increase of funds with for EPN is to provide those resources to make sure that none of those slip through the cracks this year, because this year kind of will be the be a real key year for those agreements.
So just explain to the committee what EPN is. And what
so, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chair, EPN is the Environmental Policy Network, and it was launched by, I guess, one of former state legislator Kelly Mader, who unfortunately, as we all know, passed away unexpectedly about a year and a half ago. But Randy Eminger was a gentleman who worked for, I want to say, Southern States Energy Council for a number of years, and certainly knows those issues. But the whole concept, the whole idea is that we see the Sierra Club, you know, Natural Resources Defense Council, you know, pick your environmental group du jour, actively involved on the state level on these coal plant closures. So whenever there's a public service commission hearing to either, you know, do a rate case or add a new anything or something, they're putting in filings, they're testifying, you know, they're making their claim as to why these coal plants could shut down. And Kelly recognized that there is nobody from the pro-coal side, the fossil energy development side, that is making the case the other way, you know, making the case about the economics, you know, and how important it is to keep these plants open. You know, talking that a $1.5 billion power plant, you know, the taxable value to that county is significantly more than, you know, the alternative. Or if you do close that down and you're importing power from, you know, some other state, that tax base goes away and those jobs and all those things. And so I guess trying to balance that argument and balance that debate. And, you know, I know Kelly's original intent was to have a lot of the coal companies come in and help fund this. And, you know, Randy, he's a one-man shop, and like Kelly before him, you know, and the support that he gets is either in kind from, you know, companies and myself, you know, kind of helping him look through things or pull things together. Or he's doing it himself, you know, and the actual annual budget for EPN is about $1 million a year. And, you know, which doesn't hold a candle to what you see Sierra Club and others spending. But, you know, as he was trying to get things up and running, you know, all the coal companies were currently in bankruptcy and, you know, just weren't in a position financially or legally to sign on. Kelly approached the Infrastructure Authority and Governor Mead's office to say, hey, I think this is important. So that year one, you know, we stepped up, you know, the governor's office and we did and said, we kind of want to, you know, this makes a lot of sense and let's see what the results are. And so last year, you know, there's some, plants in Oklahoma that saved direct tons that kept online, you know, and made that return on investment. You know, it was very evident. And then this year with Arkansas, you know, the same thing. And so, I guess it's hard to argue the value of this, you know, of what it means to the state to keep coal tons going and moving. You know, as a state, we dropped from 485 million tons of coal produced in 2010 or 2011 to last year was about 275, and I think the new normal is going to be about 310, something like that. And so when we see that we're able to keep, you know, another 8 million tons per year on here, or in Texas it's 7.5 million tons, you know, all of that stuff adds up. And you know, and these different states, you know, that's where we're seeing the fight happening now. You know, with the change in administration, you know, it's not going to be the Pruitt EPA that is advocating to close down power plants. It's going to be the state level regulatory actions. And, the other side, they're committing the resources to hit the ground. And so EPN is trying to do the same to balance out that those arguments.
So Jason, what I'm curious about is, do you monitor their, annual budget and to figure out, because we're a major contributor to it, where the dollar goes, how they're spent, what the salaries are, whether it's reasonable and that type of thing, and are they working towards getting more additional funding from private industry as originally contemplated and on their five-year business plan, or how they're moving forward?
Mr. Co-Chairman, yes, they are. A big part of what they're trying to do now is, as these coal companies are coming out of bankruptcy and they're getting staff back up and kind of moving into this operational phase, is there is interest for these states to come back in. Because one thing that we've made clear is, hey, we've had to take our budget reductions like everybody else, and, you know, we see the value, but at the end of the day, we may not be in a position to continue to fund this, especially at this level. So, you know, with Randy coming on board, you know, taking over for Kelly, he's really getting his legs under him now. And so that's one of the things that we're trying to do is help him have this thing become self-sustaining. You know, we've talked to the AG's office and, you know, our own outside counsel, because we understand as a state entity, you know, we can't lobby. You know, there's a fine line there. Actually, not a fine line. It's a pretty thick line of what we can and can't do and areas we can and can't cross. And, you know, and we've made it very clear to them that none of the funds that we are providing can be used for lobbying activities. You know, that this actually has to be, everything has to be used for sort of this education advocacy, and you know, that's where there might be a fine line is where that comes. But, you know, we've made it really clear that at some point this needs to be self-sustaining.
And then in your 1920 budget, what are you anticipating going to EPN?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, we haven't really thought that far ahead yet. You know, I think this year we're hoping to see what budget they come back with and what sort of response they receive from, you know, companies like Peabody. And I know Cloud Peak has been a funder for a number of years, but Peabody has exited bankruptcy. You know, Arch, just earlier this week, I don't know if folks saw that Contour sold their two coal mines to Blackstone. To be honest, it's a company I know nothing about them. So, you know, it'll be really kind of hitting the ground and seeing what we can do. But, you know, like anything, you can always do more with more. But, you know, it does seem like this $1 million a year total budget is, they're making it work.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, I had another question on your 900 series. You said early that your salaries were 900 series, but in your 900 series report, they weren't reported. And so I would like an explanation of that or why they're not in this 900 series report.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, is I believe it was the first time as I was preparing this, and I'll have to check with my budget analyst, but I was told that salaries weren't to be included in that part, that the Series 900, what was to be delivered was the actual activities that you carry out. So I can go back and find out further information and be happy to compile that information and share that with you as well. So,
follow up, Mr. Chair. So I just a question to Don. Is you know, what is the 900 series policy for reporting to us, and what should be on there?
Mr. Chairman, it has evolved. Our directions this year were any external contract in excess of $5,000, and that $5,000 limitation was primarily implemented for the agencies like the Department of Health and Department of Family Services, which even with those greater than $5,000, it's too large to print. But any external contract in this case, and candidly for the prior agency, the Pipeline Authority, they are structured unusually, but I believe all of them are on AWET contracts. So just like an AWET contract would appear from the Department of Family Services on their 900 series, and you've seen some of those from time to time, these should be treated in the same way.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jason, thank you for updating your narrative.
Okay, let's get to your budget.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, as I mentioned, our budget is fairly straightforward, fairly simple. 1.3 for the biennium, approximately 240,000 is our Series 200. That our office expenses, travel, IT. Those types of activities. I feel we've done a really good job over the last few years reducing those costs. You know, we moved to a different office. We've changed some vendors. You know, our insurance carriers are now different. And so always looking for those avenues to find those additional cost savings. But for the most part, we really have done everything we can in our Series 200 that we can do, and so therefore I mentioned, you know, the rest of it is Series 900. Historically, the Infrastructure Authority has contracted and funded a number of academic studies in support of projects in various economic situations, and the fact of the matter is with the $240,000 reduction that we had to do since last biennium, that is the one thing that we're just not doing anymore, those academic studies. So, you know, really that's where we found our savings.
Jason, could you get us a copy of your salary schedule?
Sure.
Since it's not in here.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you. Jason, I'm looking at page 5, and you talk about the approximately $660,000 in bond repayments, special revenue.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see that as part of your budget request. And how, where those funds go as part of your budget.
So, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chair, the bonding authority, the way that it was set up in 2004, is the idea was that eventually the Infrastructure Authority would be self-funded, where the interest off the bonds would eventually roll back into your operation funds and just be a part of that. And this all predates me, but I think it became very evident that the bonding authority wasn't going to be utilized as heavily as I think people had hoped and planned. And, you know, and that's a broader, I think, policy discussion is it effective? Could we make it more effective? But the fact of the matter is, as the state or WIA has only ever issued one bond, and that was in 2006 for a transmission line for Basin Electric, and so that bond I think was a 20-year bond, and so we're in the last 7-8 years of that, and so that interest per our organic statute just rolls back into our operations funds and doesn't go through, it's not appropriated. And since our operations fund and that bonding interest didn't really work as planned, it was probably 2007, 8, again, before I came on, just started becoming a general fund appropriated entity.
Well, and I guess I understand that concept, but even if it rolls back into your budget, it still has to, you still have to have authority then when you receive those dollars to expend them and appropriate them, which means they got to be in your budget. At least that's my understanding. Don, if I'm missing that, but or Kevin, you're thinking on it?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, pursuant to his explanation, I'm guessing, I don't know this, I haven't found it yet, but there would be some continuous appropriation in his statute for this agency that allows them to retain the funds. I'm not familiar with it, so I'm looking at that right now, but that's the only explanation I could come up with that would provide for those funds not to come before this committee for legislative approval. If there is some, you know, statutory these funds shall be continuously appropriated.
I'm just curious. That's not a big deal. It's just when you have LSO look at the budgets and they're going, well, where's the 60 and why is it not? Why don't you have a line item saying bond services into operations so it comes in and comes out and we see it where it's going?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chairman, I will, I'll take a closer look at that. And what you're mentioning is something that, I guess, that working off prior year's budgets and just kind of moving forward is something that has never been raised and addressed. But point well taken. And
it should also be at least mentioned as an offset to the general fund request. You know, here's our actual budget. It's $40,000 less in request because of this revenue here.
Okay, Mr.
Or
Chairman.
Whatever the amount that came in is.
So then, one more, Jason.
Mm-hmm.
Going to page 11 and 12, you reflect that there remains, you said that your new rent covers utilities, but you have $8,632 in Series 203 for utilities.
Per year.
So I'm curious, those don't make sense to me.
So, yes, as we move forward with the utilities side of things, we've had to kind of blow up our budget and start over from scratch. And we're currently working with our auditors to get a handle on all of those exact expenditures because in the past, our utilities were a part of our rent and now they're not. And, the thought was if we zero our utility expense out completely, if our office were to change, you can't really go back and add it back in, but it's all part of Series 200 anyway, if that makes sense. Because when we're looking at things like the ITC, is yes, we are not state employees. We may need to perhaps find a larger office if we do need to contract additional help on things. And so as we were working with our budget analysts and went through our meeting with the governor's office, is the thought was to at least leave something in there that gives us that flexibility. And I should add to our budget is we're not part of the Wolf system. We receive our check, from, I guess, the state auditor's office every year for our full amount, and we use private banking. And, so it's different, and, the budget amounts don't exactly always line up. We realize that, and that is something I guarantee that we are fixing. Because we did last year contract with McGee, Hearn and Pies, got a new auditor in that when I came in and just said, okay, we need to get these numbers absolutely figured out, which I know isn't a great answer. But one thing that I can promise is next year when I come in that we'll have these numbers down.
Well, and I can understand that and getting the ship righted is always a good thing. But if you do end up expanding because of that project or whatever, then that you get a B-11, you get funds from the governor, and you come back and ask them a supplemental as opposed to preloading to get ready for what may happen. So.
Okay. Makes sense.
All right. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you. All right, we're going to take another break for about 10 minutes, and then we'll also while the State Construction Department gets set up, and then we'll hopefully finish up with them. Next agency up is Agency 27, State Construction Department. Mr. McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Del McComey, Director for the State Construction Department. Have with me this morning Mr. Brandon Finney, our budget analyst, and Mr. Mel Muldrow, the administrator on the construction management staff. We do have some of our project managers, if there's specific questions, maybe details that you might have on any of the building projects going on around the state or upcoming, and they can certainly get into that kind of detail if you'd like, Mr. Chairman. With that, Mr. Chairman, if you turn to page 51, I believe that's where we kind of left off yesterday afternoon, or evening, I guess, when we finished up. And we'll start with the State Construction Department budget, and I'll turn it over to Brandon.
Happy Friday, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Brandon Finney, State Construction Department. Just to recap, Agency Book 027, State Construction Department, included the new Operations Division, School Facilities Division Operations, Construction Management Division Operations, and School Capital Construction. On page 51 is the Construction Management Division Operations. Looking at column 2 is our preliminary estimate. Column 3 is the Section 320 cuts, which was required. Those cuts included $2,000 in communications. As you recall, yesterday the director talked about going digital. We had a $2,000 cut there. We had $13,008 in office supplies and printing. And also, the director yesterday spoke about creating efficiency within the department. And we currently had, when we first merged, we had 4 printers. So then we went and cut 2 printers on the CM side, which is another $8,326 cut. So we had a total 320 cut of $23,334. In the department revisions, as you recall, we talked about transferring funds from each of the respective divisions, which would be Construction Management Division and School Facilities Division, up to the operations to fund those employees that are on both sides and provide support to the agency as a whole. Those transfers were done here, showing in column 4, leaving the department's budget for the remaining people of 7 in the Construction Management Division of a $1.5 million budget. As you can see in column number 7, the governor had a recommendation to fund this. Turning on to page 52 is the additional asks. The first ask is $275,000 in travel. Currently, the travel is done in multiple ways. We're trying to reconcile the accounting processes so both divisions, Construction Management Division and School Facilities Divisions, operate in a consistent manner. This ask would align those processes. The next one is for $7,988 in office supplies. And the third ask is for $6,094, which is central service and data. It's essentially a Google Cloud platform where documents and information is shared, and that is for the Capitol Square project specifically. The final request would be for a one-time limited position, which is currently resides in the Capitol Square project. The project is not going to be done until the end of this next biennium, and that services of that position would be needed to continue so that we can close out the books and reconcile all the accounts. This position is currently doing that and will continue to be needed until the project is 100% done and completed.
Representative Larson.
Thank you. Is that currently an FTE or an AWAC?
Mr. Chairman, that position is actually noted within the project itself, and it's funded by the capital project. We had two positions within the department that were time-limited positions that were were funded by the capital project. One of those we have eliminated, and so this is remaining, and that is a position. This individual helps with the accounting for the project and keeping all the pay invoices, those sort of things, checked and straight, and then entering all that data into our fiscal.
Please continue.
Mr. Chairman, moving on to page 55. This is the community college CapCon section. We currently have one position that works in this, that is funded through this section. The total amount is $232,039. As you see in the department revisions, this money is being transferred up to the operations. As the director spoke yesterday, all project managers are no longer a specific project manager. Everybody is just a project manager and can be assigned to whichever project is needed and those resources and skills needed to be put on that particular project. This position has also been transferred up to the operations and put into the project manager category.
The governor's recommendation.
The governor has recommended that this be done. Mr. Chairman, that's the conclusion of the construction management division's operations.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, just going back to that time-limited position, again, that is currently being funded from the capital renovation funds, and again, the governor recommended that that funding of $170,693 be one time from the capital renovation funds.
No questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We can proceed then to the capital construction budget. So this will have all the individual construction projects that have been through the State Building Commission, the Governor's Office, and then forwarded on. Mr. Chairman, if the committee would so like, we can move to page 9. That's the first construction project.
I'm sorry, which?
Page 9.
Yeah, I'm sorry, which book are we on?
The CapCon
book. The CapCon book. It's not the budget book, it's CapCon book.
Agency
027.
027.
Right in the front?
Got it.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, this first request is dealing with the State Building Commission, and it's asking for an additional funding of $5,061,820 in general fund money for the page 9 for the SBC contingency fund. I believe the last time that funding was put into there was in 2015. The SBC tries to keep a accrued balance in that particular fund to address developing projects, level one reconnaissance, property acquisitions, particularly on the Capitol Square. You know, when houses or buildings come up in that area, the SBC asks our department to do an assessment of that and see if, whether it's a viable, something that's viable that the state would like to buy within that capital construction area, and then also or the capital complex area, and then for emergency repairs to state facilities.
Representative Larson.
Thank you. Director McComey, do we have a list of funds that was expended from that fund for this year?
We don't have it with us, but I can get it.
Mr. Chairman, we don't have it with us, but we can certainly get that for you. And I'll have Mel talk a little bit about the balance that's in there now and where we're trying to get to.
Mr. Chairman, Mel Muldrow, Administrators, State Construction Department. The current balance that we have right now is $1.6 million is what we have in that account today. Normally that account is funded to about $8 million. So between 15 and to today's date, we just ran the numbers yesterday again. We've expended approximately about $5.5 million of that account over the last 3 years, 2 years actually.
Mr. Chairman, if there's no other questions, we can move to the next.
So, Mr. Co-Chair, I'm curious how where the $8 million comes from. And I don't know that I'm looking at appropriations over the years. And it must always keep a couple million-dollar contingency in there by the end of each biennium because sometimes we refill it $6 million, sometimes $2
million. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. There isn't, you know, it just depends on how much money has been coming out of there, and we're just trying to replenish the funds that were put back in. Again, as Mr. Muldrow indicated, in this past, since we put money in, was about $5.5 million expended, so we're asking for about five more to go back into that fund.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director, I'm not sure if you or maybe Don, do you know, do these funds, are they in the state agency pool then or while they're sitting?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, they are.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Director McComey. It sticks in my mind that your department also kind of had CapCon contingency fund where we have some major maintenance funds that are there. Is there any reason those couldn't be used in lieu of having this? Or is there a difference on how they're – it just kind of almost seems to me as a duplicate use of funds?
Mr. Chairman, actually they're not. Major maintenance by statute has it's to be used for your existing buildings and situations where you're working on a building or a component of a building. In this case, we may be purchasing property and things of that nature, which is not allowed with major maintenance funds.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I was kind of looking at emergency repairs to state facilities and things of that nature where I've heard in recent discussions on the prison and the Capitol and stuff where we have used those resources.
Mr. Chairman, yes. Item number three there is emergency repairs, and we would use major maintenance for that if there's major maintenance dollars available. I don't know, Mel, if you can recall in this last year if anything was spent for an emergency that would have qualified for major maintenance. Again, we can get you that report, and you can take a look at that. Mr. Chairman, if there's no other questions, page 12, and that's the major maintenance account request. As we talked a little bit yesterday, Mr. Chairman, about the Facility Engineering Associates, FEA, and the work that they did this past year where we analyzed the state buildings for condition, and their recommendation was that there be an estimate multiplier on that calculation for major maintenance of 2.56. In this case, we sent this to the governor with both a estimation of the 2.56 and the traditional number that was sent of 2.0. And the governor is recommending the dollars associated with the 2.0 of $110,482,799.
2.56% of what?
When you go through, there's a calculation where you look at the condition of the buildings. They assess that. They look at the RS means value that we talked about.
Of the property.
Yes. Yep. The square footage of the property, there's a calculation runs through that. Then there's a multiplier put onto that. In this case, when they look at that, that's 2.56 would be a percentage that, given the square footage of the buildings the state has and the replacement value, RS means value, the replacement value to keep those up to date from a maintenance standpoint, the consultant figured that we should be using a number of 2.56.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I'm not sure I heard it. What was last year's expenditure on, or last biennium's expenditure on major maintenance?
Mr. Chairman, the expenditure from last year, or from the last biennium, was $65,161,829.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director, just following up on that, the recommendation of 2.56, it says that that assumes the portfolio is new. I mean, not that I'm trying to put in more money, but would that suggest that with the age of our buildings, we might want something more like 2.9 or some other number? Just realistic.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, certainly the newer the building, the less money that you have to put into it to maintain it. But there are life cycle costs of a building. So when they're looking at this, they say that, for example, the HVAC, the heating system, maybe will last for 35 years before it needs to be replaced. The electrical has a different life cycle. Roofs are generally 15 to 20 years. So when they're factoring that into those buildings, when they're assessing them, they are looking at those and providing those scores we talked about yesterday from the 1 to 5, not the point score. And so they take that into account when they're assessing these buildings also.
Co-chair.
Mr. Co-chair.
So, Del, in that same vein, you've got the report that was done that has deferred maintenance at $185 million.
Correct.
So where is that report? Is it on your website? If we want to look at it, not that I've got anything else to do over Christmas, but I'd like to.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, we can certainly provide that report to you. We did provide that to the SBC, and it actually lists building by building what those scores and that sort of information is. So it's pretty robust. Would you want just the report itself, or do you want a breakdown from the buildings?
Well, I'm curious.
Just a summary?
I guess the report itself would do it, and if we want to go look at particular items, we can do so. But,
okay. Mr. Chairman, we can certainly provide that to you.
And just so we're clear as to what's going on, with the new proposed percentage of the 2.56, that figure came out to almost $141 million for the biennium?
That's correct.
But then the governor recommended that we stick with the old percentage at $110 million.
That's correct.
Okay.
Okay, our next item is on
Wait, hold on, okay. Don.
Yep.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's important to clarify. The old amount was 1.5%, and that generated the $65 million. So even the governor's rec is an increase of $35
million. Well, then I'm confused. If we spent $65 million last year on major maintenance, then the biennium doubles that to $110 million.
Mr. Chairman, the last biennium was 2%, and the Joint Appropriations Committee made some changes to that, and it ended up at about 1.5%, but then there was an additional $13 million, I believe, Don, that was taken off of that amount then later when this bill was being debated or worked through. So we ended up at the end of the day, the 1.5 amount would have been a little over $76 million, and then we ended up at $65 million. So there was an $11 million deduct off of what the 1.5 that I think came out of the committee when it originally came through. But the original ask, if I recall, was a 2% last biennium.
Okay, so that would have put us at the 11 came off, so that would have put us at about 130 if we hadn't pulled that off for the biennium. Or was it last year we pulled it off, so it was only 1 year's worth?
Well, we'd have been at 1.5, we'd have been at 80 million, so just assuming it's a straight line factor there. Now, there are, you know, it goes into the square footage of buildings and those sort of things, but assuming there wasn't any changes there, we'd have been at if we're at 110 now. But keep in mind that the RS means value has changed and gone up this year, so it'd be a little bit higher.
Okay.
So you're looking at probably about
so we're not
maybe 100.
We're not looking at a static target. We're looking at a dynamic target. Okay.
Yes.
Got it.
Anything else on major maintenance, Mr. Chairman?
Not that I see. Oh, wait a minute. I'm sorry. Senator Landon had a question.
Just real quickly, Dale, can you help me remember State Department of Transportation and the Game and Fish? You guys have anything to do with buildings that they build or maintain or so they're entirely separate. Do I understand that correctly?
That's correct. I'll let Mel get into the details if you'd like, but there are specific agencies that this money is calculated for that agency, then it flows out to those agencies. So, for example, the community college get part of this, the state buildings, and then it's broke down by agency within those state buildings. The parks, the money flows directly to them also. UW comes out of this pot of money. Military department.
So whatever they use to update, let's just use Spee's Hatchery for an example up in Casper. If they're going to rebuild one of those homes out there, that apparently comes out of other funds generated through the Game and Fish and approved by the Game and Fish Commission. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that would be correct. We would not provide any money out of this major maintenance.
You guys.
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
Thank you.
Okay, page 16, Mr. Chairman. This is the first capital construction request. It's the health science building remodel and expansion for Northern Wyoming Community College District. And so it's important to realize the acronym here. It's the Northern Wyoming Community College District. It's not the Northern Wyoming Community College. Different animals. This request is for a level two for this project. There's about 19,500 square feet in the proposed remodel with another 8,400 square feet in the current Whitney building. It's a renovation and expansion of the health science building. The project was ranked first and subsequently recommended for level two funding. Both the SBC and the governor's office recommended that this project move forward. The governor, however, is recommending denial of this request at the present because it's not clear on the prioritization. And I know the governor will be offering up alternative funding for this and some of the other community college projects to the JAC in the governor's letter.
Mr. Co-Chair. Do we know when the governor's letters will show up?
Mr. Chairman, I've been told that it'd be first or second week of January. And we do have Dr. Schaefer from the community college here that would address any questions on this particular project if you have some.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director McComey, just want to get my head around the funding source. Is this money that's already been appropriated, we're authorizing for you to use to move forward with it? And if so, where does the source of the funding was what?
I believe it's general fund, correct?
Yeah, this is general fund.
Yeah, this is general fund is the source of the money. If you go to page 17, it kind of breaks down where that's coming from. Yep.
Now, just so we're clear on this, all these college things, my understanding is it's supposed to be a 50-50 split.
Mr. Chairman, no, it depends. There are projects, and we'll see some as we move through here. For example, the next project on page 20 is other public funds. So there are funds that are raised by the community college themselves for that. And there's other projects where the state is kicking in part of the money. Generally, it's general fund money.
Yeah.
And then college funds for those projects. So it's sometimes a mix.
So a couple of things, Mr. Co-Chair. The way that they are set out in the capital construction are not the same priorities as the recommended by the Community College Commission or the Community College folks. Is that so?
Mr. Chairman, I think therein lies the question from the governor. And why he recommends that he is going to have a more direct involvement with the community college folks to try and figure out what those recommendations are. So how this process works is the community college commission goes through their review of projects that are submitted by the community colleges. They rank those, and some of them don't pass muster, so they won't pass them over to the SBC for review. And so when they run through that process, this year we had two projects that were prioritized and passed to the State Construction Department, CM, that went to then the SBC. Projects that have already been passed over in the past. So you might have a projects that came forward, say, 2 years ago and maybe last year. They had rankings of a 1 or a 2 or a 3. Where do those now fit in this big pot? Because those projects continue to come forward to the legislature for funding. So you could have 3 different years, for example, in there, and you could have 3 priority 1s and 3 priority 2s. And I think the question that the governor had was, okay, what is this year the priority one? You could have different years of priority one, but what's this year's priority one?
And so, I mean, in referring to the letter from the community colleges, it appears that Governor has approved roughly $17 million funding through SIPA funds. So is that what we anticipate to be in the letter when it comes out?
Mr. Chairman, yes, and the process of how the prioritization works.
So then, then the next question I had, Mr. Co-Chair, was the could you just again describe the process where you add 10% and then you add 2%? And explain why that's general fund dollars versus funds from the community colleges, and just so the committee understands that process.
Mr. Chairman, Co-Chair. So, for instance, when we're asking for 10%, we're looking at the average. That's really the average amount that we think in a construction project that we're seeing for contingency money. That's pretty standard around the industry. As you know, the administrative fee that we've asked for before, which is about 2%, and the statute allows us, specifically under the community college program, that we can ask for administrative fees to run the projects. What we do with that administrative fee is that has inherently been given us the ability to be able to travel, to go to projects, to go to sites, because we can't fund that 100% out of our operations costs, because our travel expenses have been cut so dramatically, we really don't have any funds there to travel with. And just as you know, over the last year or 2 years, we've got a number of projects out there that we are challenged to support because we don't have the travel funds to do that. And that 2% gives us enough funds to be able to travel or any other administrative fees that we need to take and use outside of having to pull money away from the construction costs.
So then, and then my question is, then the next question is, why do these, are these general fund dollars versus sharing the projects 50-50 with the community colleges or whomever your projects are being funded by?
Mr. Chairman, co-chair, basically that, from what I understand, that has been the norm over the last few years. Prior to me coming here, they've always had, we didn't pick up community colleges until the year before I took over as the administrator. But prior to that, that additional, that 10% was not split between the two agencies. I know that has come up before, and it just hasn't been determined whether we should push that or not, honestly.
Well, and typically, there's already a contingency budget built into each one of those projects, and if we allow them to go forward with the project under the condition that any excess costs over that fund is their responsibility, would be just another way we could handle that issue.
As far as travel, Mr. Chairman?
No, as far as 10% overruns of construction costs.
And Mr. Chairman, I can agree with that to a point. It really depends on how that project is built out. As you know, as we looked at some of the projects, in some areas you may see 5% for construction contingency, 5% for owner's contingency built into that project. All projects don't necessarily end up like that, but if we can build that in, then the 10% would be less of an issue, I would say.
Thank you. And Mr. Co-Chair, I'm wondering if it would be more productive if we would go through the governor's recs, or do you want to go through every single project that's listed?
No, I think we should go through the governor's recs.
You've got that.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I'm assuming you're referring to the three-page letter from the governor, or from the...
So you can just take this in your construction book. Do you have
this is the one that...
I don't know.
Just distributed.
You mean the college?
This is the one that we'll talk about that and how they came up with that, because that really came from the president's.
Yeah. Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the letter is dated December 14, 2017. It's from the header on it's Laramie Community College. It's from the office of the president from Dr. Schaefer. Dr. Schaefer is here if you want to have any, discussion with the community colleges as to how they arrived at this. But we can certainly run down through. This is what they have submitted to the governor. It's not the governor's letter, but this is what they've submitted to him to try and help, I believe, clarify, the priority of these projects.
Well, I'm sorry. When you said the governor's recommendation, I thought we were talking in the book, because those are the governor's recommendations.
Correct. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We can go back to that.
And I didn't know if that's what you were talking about, Mr. Butcher.
My understanding, Mr. Co-Chair, is at the end of the day, the governor is only going to recommend, other than the anything with revenues included for matching funds, that's going to be restricted to those five proposals. The other ones that are just asking for authorization are pretty straightforward.
Yeah,
that's correct. Yeah.
So I guess my first question is, we're looking at both the Dr. Schaefer's letter and the book, and the priorities have flipped. In one, the Casper College arts facility, visual arts facility, is number one, and in the book we've got Northern Wyoming Community College District is number one. I was wondering what happened.
Mr. Chairman, this letter recently just came to the governor. I don't think the governor's made a decision, at least I'm not aware of it yet. This is what the community colleges presidents have offered up for the governor to try and help and clarify the comments that you see in the governor's recommendations in this budget request. So my understanding is that will be coming to you all through his letter. And again, my understanding is the first or second week of January.
Okay.
So if you want to work the budget book itself, capital construction, we can do that. And then if you have any questions on the letter, again, Dr. Schaefer's here and could address that. So on page 20, Mr. Chairman, we have Laramie Community College. LCCC is seeking authorization for this project and is not seeking any state funds. It's $7.3 million of other funds. And the governor, the SBC and the governor both recommend approval of these public funds. Authorization only to move forward and spend the funds.
Any questions? Okay. Seeing none.
Okay. Ms. Chairman, page 24. This project is the Visual and Performing Arts Center, Northwest Community College. This is for level two capital construction. It's estimated that the visual and performing arts facility remodel and expansion will cost approximately $32,924,171. The new construction will be approximately 45,081 square feet, coupled with the remodel of an additional 15,830 square feet of the current performing arts building. The request is for $1,009,800, 100% general fund money for this level two study. The SBC recommended approval. However, the governor recommends denial. Again, just the issue that we were talking about before. It's not clear how the current prioritization process addressed these projects. And this was the commission's number two project this year as far as priority.
This is the what?
The commission's.
Okay.
Community College Commission's priority number two for this year.
All right. Representative Larson.
So you're saying it was their number two, but in their in the community college, or is that not ranked by priority, Director McComey, because it's number four on there?
Oh, he means on there. And that's the redo priority.
This is the redo priority, and this is from the college presidents, not the commission.
Okay.
Okay. All right, next.
Okay, where are we at? Which project? Okay, on page 28, Mr. Chairman. This is the Student Center at Northwest College. Northwest College Board of Trustees is requesting a level two capital construction prioritization for the remodel of the student center. It's estimated the student center renovation will cost $35,063,688, and that original building was built in 1967. Again, that's a 100% general fund request for $1,122,000. The SBC did approve this project. However, again, the governor is recommending denial at the present time. And this was the number one project this year from the Community College Commission.
What's the name of that student center? It's named after a former legislator.
J.
John DeWitt. John DeWitt. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director McComey, could we go back to page 16 real briefly and tell us what priority that was for the Community College Commission? It is the health science expansion.
Mr. Chairman, that wasn't a project that was on the list this year from the community college, so this is one of those carryover projects that's been moving forward from prior years. I don't have where that was in the ranking previously. I think we could dig that up and provide that if you'd like that.
I believe it's not listed on the as number one on the prior rankings.
Last year, 2016. That was the community.
It's listed on the back page of the handout. On the second column, third column.
But that's not the State Building Commission.
It's their prior rank. That is WCCC.
That's why I'm in Community College Commission, not the State Building Commission.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I might ask that Dr. Schaefer maybe get up and maybe help explain this a little bit on the previous ranking to now.
I think it's in here. No, it's not. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Joe Schaefer. I'm the president of Laramie County Community College, and if you're wondering why you're seeing things on LCCC letterhead, I'm also the current president of our president's council. So I appreciate the opportunity, and I think this conversation illustrates some of the struggles that we all go through as we try to figure out the appropriate path for projects. So if I could, I know you guys are short on time, but just give a real brief background to the process, and you'll see why some of the things, the challenges occur. So first of all, as I think you know, you deal with essentially two types of projects in terms of project requests. Those that are seeking authorization only. So if a project is anticipated to go over $1 million, it requires legislative authorization. You also deal with requests where projects are seeking state funds. And in some cases, that requires both. If it's over $1 million and they're asking for state funds, you'll deal with that. But so it's important to note that there's two types of projects that are advanced to you. So quick background on how these projects basically come up and how they sort of end up before you. So the first thing to know is each college is required by statute to have a campus master plan. That master plan has to be updated every 5 years. And it essentially sets the stage for the priorities of maintenance, facilities remodels, and facilities expansions based on a variety of different factors. And while there's some consistency, each college really approaches their master planning in their own way. We then advance projects through the appropriate process for approval. We, the colleges, are on the hook for level one planning. So that first stage of planning, we fund. Now, I will say those projects that are only seeking authorization or if they fall underneath the $1 million threshold, sometimes we'll take a different approach to that planning. If it's a smaller project and it only requires the Wyoming Community College Commission's authority, we'll take different planning. But for the most part, what you need to know is the level one plans are done by the college based on the prioritization of their campus master plans. We then submit those to the Wyoming Community College Commission. And again, some are just seeking authorization. So if it's over $100,000, less than $1 million, we're just asking for their authorization to proceed with local funds. If it's over $1 million, we still ask for their authorization, and then it comes to the governor and to the legislature for that. The commission runs a capital construction prioritization model, and that model is pretty much the same as it was even before some of the construction management responsibilities shifted over to the construction division quite a few years ago now. They do not prioritize those projects seeking authorization because it's local funds, other funds. They don't prioritize. They just authorize those. They do prioritize and rank those projects that are seeking state funds, though. And so this is an annual process, and projects are only submitted once unless for some reason a college opts to have them resubmitted. And then on an annual basis, those are advanced to the construction division for the State Building Commission. And that's one of our first challenges is you get a new prioritization, new list of projects every single year. I included on the back of that letter, you'll see the capital construction model that we use with the commission includes 13 capital measures. One of the reasons they do this on an annual basis is those measures are fluid. And so when we look at some of them, they change year to year to year. And so unless every project were to resubmit, it's hard to actually take a long-term perspective on that. So those goes on to construction management. Then the colleges work with the construction division to put together essentially the requests that go before the State Building Commission. Now, typically, that is level two request, and then after level two planning, level three planning, and then construction. I don't know that this is codified anywhere in statute, but the general history has been the colleges pay for level one, the state pays for the entirety of the level two planning process, with exception. And then generally we've had the split, the 50-50 split when it comes to level three and construction process. So the construction division works with the State Building Commission and they consider and make recommendations to the governor. It is not my impression, although I could be wrong, that the State Building Commission actually prioritizes the projects. They're either recommended to the governor or they're not recommended to the governor. And then it gets pretty clear from there, I think. The governor considers it. It comes out within his budget, comes to you as the Joint Appropriations Committee, and then on to the legislature for your consideration. So that's the general process, and that's why sometimes you will see within any annual budget or biennial budget projects that are at different stages, through the process. So that takes us to the current request and ultimately the letter from the president. In the governor's budget letter to the legislature, he expressed his continued concern about this process and how we, result in a ranked order list. What he recommended was that you consider appropriating essentially $20 million through the SIPA fund, which likely wouldn't hit, until summer of 2019, to fund community college capital construction. And then he wants to work with the construction division, the Wyoming Community College Commission, the colleges, and others to come up with a prioritized list. What we were trying to do is get ahead of that and actually have something for you to consider. And so working with the construction division, working with the governor's office, working with the Community College Commission, and working with the community college presidents, we came up with what we would recommend as a prioritized list for capital construction at the community colleges for the coming biennium. And probably the best place to look is that very last sheet, that legal size sheet on the handout that you have. And so what we did with this sheet, as you fall from the past, we took into consideration the ranking of the Wyoming Community College Commission, the history of the project, as well as previous legislative action to try to come up with a longitudinal prioritized list, if you will. And so you could see as you move from the left to right, the college, the project, the ranking, the Community College Commission's ranking, and the year that it was ranked. So, for example, the visual arts facility at Casper College was ranked number two in the 2014. The reason you don't see a number one here is we've already moved beyond that. Those projects are under work or actually going forward. You also have the data.
Wait a minute. Can you hold up for Representative Boswell? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And then you have a listing, and the best of our ability to try to put it, to kind of look at previous legislative action, because that's appropriate as well. And so for that first priority in the 2015 legislature, you appropriated or approved level two planning and appropriated $300,000 to help conduct that level two planning. And you can go through and see where we're at. And then the very last column is essentially what's before you in terms of the requests of the community colleges and what we would recommend based on our submittals to the construction management. We note in the letter, please note, that this is just for the projects themselves and does not take into account any contingency or administrative percentages that construction management requests per statute. This is just for construction themselves. And then finally, the last thing I'll note is that the two
project seeking level three planning and construction dollars, the visual arts facility at Casper and then the fine arts facility at LCCC, we're recommending that you place stipulations that the equivalent local match is secured prior to the release of the state funds for the construction of those projects. And so similar to, I believe, how we handled some of the projects, I know the LCCC library project that is just getting underway now. So with that, Mr. Chairman, that's how we arrived at the prioritization. That's how we tried to pull things together. Well, I cannot say the governor has endorsed or recommended this list. His office has said he is comfortable with us sharing this recommended prioritization list to you. It's been vetted by Wyoming Community College Commission staff and Dr. Rose, and he's comfortable with us sharing this with you. We've been working with the construction management folks and Administrator Mel Meldrow, and we're feeling good. And the presidents all voted and unanimously agreed to move this recommended list forward to the Joint Appropriations Committee. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to answer any questions or also sit down and let you on your way.
Questions?
Thank you.
Okay, what are we on? 32. Albany, yes. Okay, next, Mr. Chairman, we're on page 32. And this is the Albany County Campus Classroom Expansion, Laramie Community College. And again, the Board of Trustees for the Laramie Community College have requested additional spending authorization for Level 3 and construction dollars for LCCC's Albany County Campus Classroom Expansion and Renovation. It's estimated this project will now cost an estimated $1.3 million. And as Dr. Schaefer mentioned earlier, it's coming before you because it's over the $1 million. And again, this is 100% other public funds. So they're just requesting the approval to expend those funds, and the governor did recommend approval of that $1.3 million. Next is page 36. This is the visual arts building at Casper Community College. And Casper College is requesting funding of the construction of the visual arts facility. The results of the building assessment determined the renovation of this existing building will likely result in a facility that would be more costly than to fully and which would not meet the needs of the college than to do new construction. So the ask here is $9,610,000 in general funds and $7,750,000 in other funds.
Mr. Chairman, and I know we'll get another look at this, but just on the last sheet we were given, this particular project was actually seeking $7,750,000, which would be a kind of the direct match of the public funds. And so I guess as we go forward, it'd be interesting to know where the other chunk of money is going to come from, but I'm sure that'll all be lined out.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, the difference that you're talking to, as you indicated, that 7.75 is a 50-50 split between the 15,500, but that does not include the 1.5 million plus the 310 that we asked for contingency and for admin fees. And so that ask is general fund ask is what we do with that. Okay. That's why you see the 9.6 versus 7.75.
Got you. Now I understand the.
Okay. Good.
Please continue.
Mr. Chairman, the next is on page 40. This is mechanical repairs to Western Wyoming Community College. And these are mechanical repairs and replacement project is estimated at $8 million. And I'll go into a little more detail on that here shortly. Western Wyoming Community College is seeking funding for level two design, mechanical, electrical, plumbing, and fire suppression systems that have been in operation for over 30 years and services approximately 750,000 square feet of building. This includes the majority of the classrooms, the offices, and the support areas in the main campus. And the deteriorating conditions of these components continues to increase with multiple system failures. Each failure continues to put operations of the facility and the safety of the staff and the students at risk. And the ask here is $571,000 in general fund. The SBC did recommend approval. And the governor, again, recommended denial of this request. What I wanted to note on that $8 million budget estimate is that we did just recently, this past week, receive some additional information from the consultant that has been reviewing that. And there was a letter that came out from the college. The latest estimate was about $14 million. We've been working with the consultant and reviewing those figures, and it's closer to a little over $13 million, I believe, to do all of that work.
So, Mr. Chairman, this is, one, is this a continuation of the issue we dealt with last year? And, two, I don't see it in the CapCon project discussion here. So how does the community college folks – rate a basically a maintenance project? And I guess explain how, so if we don't do this, if the governor's recommending denial, I'm not sure I understand where it's going to now fit in the whole landscape of things.
Ms. Chairman, this is the same project that we were that came before the legislature, actually probably during the session last year. And so again, we are out at this point in time with a consultant reviewing, you know, what work needs to be done. And, of course, as I noted, the latest report is much higher than the $8 million that was originally estimated. I'll let the President Schaefer address his thoughts on how this fits into their letter.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, at this time, I think all of the presidents recognize that there's a challenge at Western Wyoming Community College. We have not at this point come to any agreement or a consensus because we're not quite sure what the approach will be. I know Vice President Sheldon Flom is here from Western to talk about the project, but it's been our impression that Dr. Leach has really been specific in that this is a major maintenance project, not a capital construction project, and that's why it's been excluded from the capital construction list and the recommendations that you have. And so I don't know that the college presidents have actually come to any type of consensus or agreement on how to even recommend what you do with the Western project. But I know Sheldon's here. I don't know if he wants to share any thoughts that are coming from your end. Mr. Chairman, with your...
Thank you. I'm Sheldon Flom with Western Wyoming Community College. And we appreciate the chance to bring this project up because it's rather unique. When it came up last year, we were wondering how to approach it. We've worked closely with the Construction Management Division on it. And last year, the legislators appropriated about $200,000 to start the study on the project, which we've done. And from there, we've been able to develop a course of action and pricing for the project. And what we did is we divided it into two sections, priority one, priority two needs, priority one being critical mass, if you will. And that was just about $7.9 million, with priority two being about $5.9. And when we were looking at this originally, we visited with the Community College Commission staff, Matt and Larry, to determine, you know, is this really a capital construction, and how would it be prioritized? And we sat down and looked at it, and it doesn't fit within the model at all. It just doesn't work in there. And so they recommended that it be a major maintenance project. Again, we've visited with Dennis Egge and Mel on it. And they also agree that it's probably best to put it under major maintenance. Now, there's been some concerns that this would take away from the other colleges and their major maintenance request. We've always intended that this would be a separate ask because we all have ongoing conditions at our colleges that need to be addressed. And so, again, we'd be asking for a separate appropriation. And to be quite honest, I would love to get the total $14 million all at once, but I know that's not going to be possible with the current conditions that we have in the state. So we would be looking for part of that so that we can get our HVAC system under control and to get it back to the stage that it needs to be. One last thing I'd point out is that, you know, over the years we have tried to keep up on our maintenance of the building. Right around 2000, the boilers were replaced. Since 2003, we've put approximately $1.6 million into the infrastructure of our buildings, about 1.4 of that in academic areas. And so it's just been accumulation of things that have happened over the years. You know, Dell said earlier that the life of an HVAC system is 30 to 35 years. We're right to that point. And so we're starting to see some failures. We found out through the study funded by the state that we have microbes in our piping system that are causing corrosion, and that's causing system failures. And that needs to be addressed because the pipes are weakening and they're also clogging and not getting heat to our areas that we have. The electrical system of the college, the cabling that goes around the outside for the distribution system, in the 80s, you could use aluminum cabling, and you can't use that anymore. Again, that has a life of about 30 years. We're starting to see failures on it, and there's some real safety concerns associated with it. So we've just had some unusual issues, and so we're just asking for help to help us through this phase. And I'd like to apologize. Dr. Leach would like to be here, but she had other commitments, so I got the short straw. Any questions that I could answer?
Mr. Chairman, I have a follow-up, but it's more for Dell. Okay. But thank you. So I guess my question is this is a request for a level two design on what is maybe a major maintenance project. So I'm still not sure I understand. Will this, I guess this will evolve over time and we'll see something different? Or is, because I'm not clear how this is going to go forth yet.
Mr. Chairman, just due to the scale of this project, we're trying to, there will be design that needs to be done. We're looking at the piping, throughout the building. There, interestingly enough, when I was out and toured, the site, there's one water main that comes in and feeds this campus. And again, Wyoming Community College, if you've been out there, is a little bit different than the other campuses around the state. They basically have one giant building is their campus, rather than multiple buildings. So they have this one, water line that comes into the building, and that line needs some work, or they need to be able to shut it down, and because they have some piping leaks right inside the building next to that. And so when they do that, they're going to be out of water on the campus. So we've got to figure out another method, for example, to try and still supply some water, and then get that building shut down. The wiring that comes in, they've already had failures on some of the fuses. And when we're talking about fuses, we're not talking about little fuses. These fuses are like this long and this big around, because of that, issue with that aluminum, wiring. And they've had some of the, not capacitors, transformers, have failed, and they've had to replace some of those. So we're trying to figure out the sequence on which we can do this. They have to do this primarily during the summer months when their student population is down. And so they can't do a $14 million project or a $5 million project, in any one year when they come through. There's parallel things they can do with the water system and the HVAC system, versus the electrical. But this isn't going to be a single season project. And, Mr. Chairman, if I could, I think there's examples of this both on the state side and on the school side on how we handle these major maintenance projects. And I think the one issue out there is that this is a large major maintenance project. It's not your typical, I'm going to replace a roof or I'm going to do something with just the heating system versus the whole piping that comes with that heating system. And so on the school side, that's where you've probably seen from our presentation yesterday, there was those district component projects. Those are projects that were submitted that are beyond the scope of the normal major maintenance funding dollars that the school gets. On the state side, again, you have some large projects, say the roof. We've discussed and probably discussed later today the roof at the prison, $6.5 million. That's beyond, well beyond the means for the amount of major maintenance dollars that the prison gets. So in those cases, we come back and ask for separate funding. We try and incorporate the major maintenance dollars they have to do the work, but we also ask for additional funding to make it so they have the ability to do that. So I think that's one, you know, those are two examples that the Joint Appropriations Committee could look at for funding this project. They currently have about $1 million left in their major maintenance. This next biennium, they'll get $2 million plus, so they'll have some there, but as was talked about earlier, they have ongoing needs, so they need some of that major maintenance dollars for other work. So how do we supplement that? And I think that's what this study will lay out to show, moving forward, that here's the work we can do, with major maintenance dollars, and here's the additional funding that would be required to make this happen over time.
Dell, this is dragging out, longer than we thought it would. Okay. How much more time do you think you're gonna, cause I'm trying to think of how to squeeze in lunch.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, when we get back to these later projects, they're basically just passed through federal funding and requests from, there's three of them that are just requests from state parks for authorization to use funding they already have. They'll go pretty quick.
And this is the last college project, isn't it?
The only other one is the,
there's one more. There's the Fine and Performing Arts Building in Laramie Community College, I believe.
All right. Let's go ahead. Let's plow ahead.
Okay. So anyway, I think we can address this through the governor's letter as we move forward.
The governor's addressing everything in the governor's letter.
Yeah. Well, it's all tied to
putting the suspense back in capital construction.
Yeah, exactly. It's all tied to the community college and the priorities. But the other thing that I'd like to add here, and I think it goes along with my previous discussion, is that policy standpoint for the state of Wyoming, does the state want to fund these major maintenance projects in total for the community colleges as we move forward in the future? Typically, what's been done in the past is that the community colleges will also go out and ask for bonding from the community and try and do some of this work. Here in Laramie County, that just was voted on this past November for some of their work on some of their buildings that is beyond their major maintenance. So I think that's another thing for you all to chew on from a policy standpoint.
Mr. Chairman, just quickly, I don't want to belabor this, but I've had countless brief conversations with both you and Mel, and I understand that is it characterized as is possibly looking at getting a couple million dollars would satisfy for this year, satisfy getting into the project. And I don't want to get into the whole conversation right now about major maintenance and capital construction, but am I characterizing that correctly, that if we could get them a couple additional million and looking at what the governor recommends, then we can start moving forward with this and then do this over maybe a 5-6 year period?
Mr. Chairman, that's certainly one alternative. I don't want to speak for the governor on where he may come down on the overall funding, but that would certainly get the project moving forward, yes.
Representative Burkhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director, are these evaluation reports on the conditions available? Have you done a regular report? Could you send those to us, please?
Yes.
I would like to see the specifics, and because I have a problem with this. Once everything turns 30 years old, it all falls apart, no matter where you are in the state. So I'd also like to see something that indicates what you're planning for future maintenance planning for the rest of the state. so that we don't have this constant 30 years it's done and we've got to start replacing everything for a lot of money.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Dale and really everybody, the thing that's kind of troubled me here just a little bit, and that's is my impression that the emergency here was the water lines. And that's what we addressed last year, tried to address last year in legislation. Then we found out that they had the microbial corrosion that was taking place in the water lines. And so as we see this, I was surprised today to see the other stuff thrown in here. And maybe I understand or maybe I don't the expansion of it, but that's a big factor to me, Mr. Chairman, as we determine how that what's an emergency in this list of stuff that Western Wyoming is proposing and what is long-term. And I'd like to see just a little more definitive plan from the college on what that is. I get the water lines. That makes sense to me. But the other stuff thrown in there, valid as it may be, is that does that have time to look back to the community for the traditional funding source?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, to that point and to Representative Burkhart's comment, the final report that we just got, and I didn't get it till I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday this week, the final report breaks it out in priority one and priority two, and it talks about $7 million here and $6 million there. The report will help explain the breakout and what they're suggesting on how it should flow. Priority one first, which is part of your water issues with some electrical in there. But let us get that report to you, and if you would like, we can maybe follow up on the January meeting or something and give you some more information on that, but at that time.
Let's move ahead. Page 44, Mr. Chairman. This is the Fine and Performing Arts Building in Laramie Community College. The Laramie Community College seeks to renovate a gross 22,604 square feet of the existing classroom and laboratory studio space in the Fine Arts Building, along with an additional 12,000 square feet of auditorium. The SBC did recommend approval, and this funding is broke down in the 55-45 split. There's $8,680,000 of general fund and $7 million of other funds. And again, the governor recommended denial of this request at the present time. Okay. Mr. Chairman, if we'd move to page 49, and this is the Cheyenne 115th Field Artillery Brigade Readiness Center. This request is for $28,900,000 in federal spending authority and is required to complete the level 3 design and construction for the Cheyenne 115th Artillery Brigade Readiness Center. Again, this is $28,900,000 in federal funds, and the governor does recommend approval to move this forward. Questions? Let's move ahead. Page 53. The Guernsey Training Site Command, TSC Readiness Center. This request is for $22,300,000 in federal spending authority and is required to complete the level 3 design and construction for the Guernsey Training Site Command Readiness Center. Again, that's 100% federal funded. And the governor does recommend approval of this funding.
Question, Mr. Chairman?
Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With these being federal dollars, does the state 5% preference still play into effect?
I don't know.
Typically not.
It depends on the contract.
Mr. Chairman, let me have Dave Webb comment on that. He's one of our PMs who comes from that military side. We sort of stole him away a couple of years ago, and he could probably address that a little bit better.
Mr. Chairman, Dave Webb, Construction Management. I did come from the military department, and it depends on the contracting scheme is what they use. If they go through federal contracting, it doesn't. The 5% prevailing isn't in play. And if they do use the state contracting procedure, they do utilize because that money does go through a cooperative agreement.
follow up?
Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So what do they plan to use on these two projects that we've just discussed in the last minute and a half?
At this point, we haven't discussed what they're contracting in. Actually, that's military department. If they can use either or on this. And I haven't talked to them personally, so.
Thank you.
So is there a follow-up for that? Is there a process that the governor or somebody makes a request or has that discussion with the military department?
We can follow up on that.
Mr. Chairman, we can follow up on that, Mr. Governor.
Yeah. And you can report back to your request. That markup.
Should be.
Mr. Coach, I had one question on page 53. It says, bottom of the first paragraph, 50% federal reimbursement of operations and maintenance expenditures will be required. My question is, where's the other 50% come from? Is it
right here? Dave,
I believe that's major maintenance.
Yeah.
It's the maintenance.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, Dave Webb, the portion of that 50% is actually budgeted within the request prior to them requesting them funds from NGB, National Guard Bureau. So they already have that set aside within their budget that comes from the state.
Who's they?
The military department. So it'll come from
it come from the National Guard state dollars or from general fund dollars?
It comes from National Guard state dollars.
Which comes from what?
Comes from the state dollars.
So what would the cost be then for the state 50% for our 50% operations and maintenance cost turn into on an annual financial basis?
Mr. Chairman, we can get that number for you. We'll have to drive that square footage cost and get you a number for that. All right.
All right, let's move on.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, page 57. This is the Barrett Boilers building. The Barrett Boilers and the delivery system were installed in 1990. The system is in constant need of repairs, and some have required, and some of these repairs that are required are for the boilers that are now obsolete because the manufacturer is no longer in business. Further maintenance will be at an escalating rate due to the failure rate of the systems. It is currently estimated that the efficiency range of these boilers is 60% compared to the boilers that we're proposing to install, which are at an 88% efficiency rating. This was a request for $2 million of general fund money, and the governor recommended denial. I would like to note that the Barrett building also the heat for the State Parks and Cultural Resource Agency also, and the Supreme Court building and the Hathaway building. So all three of those buildings are involved with these boilers.
Why is this not a major maintenance issue rather than capital construction?
Mr. Chairman, simply because of the dollar amount that was in there, the $2 million, it's a large amount, and that's where the governor intends to take that out of his regular major maintenance funding.
So it's coming out of the major maintenance?
That's correct.
So you stuck it in here, and then we have the denial, essentially?
That's correct, yes.
Do you know why the governor wanted to deny it?
I think just from a budget standpoint, trying to balance the budget, it was recommended through the SBC to move forward, and then the governor at that time, as a voting member, indicated that, you know, although he was approving it as a member of the SBC, he wanted to look at the overall cost of the budget moving forward for the state, and so he's recommending we just take that out of regular major maintenance dollars.
All right. Let's move on.
Next is the McGee building. This is at the Wyoming Life Resource Center. It's a remodel of that, and it will house the Department of Family Services operations there that are in Lander. The Joint Legislative and Executive Task Force on the Wyoming Department of Health facilities charged the State Construction Department. And at that time, it was the Construction Management Division of A&I to review alternatives for unused space at the Wyoming Life Resource Center. And this is a campus building that would be available through some remodeling. It has good structure that could house then the Department of Family Services work there in Fremont County. The request is for $2.17 million of general fund money, and the SBC recommended approval, and the governor is also recommending approval of the remodel of this building.
Mr. Co-Chair, so my understanding of this was that they're paying rent over in Riverton, and that by doing this, the amount of money they save over a relatively short amount of time will pay for the building.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, they currently rent a building in Lander, and it has some issues from a standpoint of water infiltration, leaks, trying to get that building cleaned up. It's also in a part of town that is has poor lighting, and with the work that the Department of Family Services does, there is some concern from the employees as far as their safety during nighttime when they're called out to work. And so that would also help on that aspect. And, yes, this would pay. This does have a payback over time.
Were they also going to move some of their offices from Riverton over, or some of their administrative staff?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know that for sure. Director Forslund's here. You may have an answer for that.
Mr. Chairman, this name's Tom Forslund. This particular facility is, as the Director McComey says, is in Lander, and it's in not good condition. And we have the opportunity with a vacant building at the Life Resource Center to renovate and be able to use that long term. And so essentially it's a reuse of an existing building. In terms of the Riverton, we moved it from a local office in Riverton to another facility in Riverton. This is separate and distinct from that project.
All right. Continue on, please.
Number 65, or page 65, excuse me, Mr. Chairman. This is the Health and Safety, State Parks and Cultural Resources. The Division of State Parks and Historical Sites seeks authorization to expend funding that they already have. So this is just seeking authorization. It's $3.8 million of special revenue funds and $500,000 from YDOT Road Act. Both the SBC and the governor are recommending approval of this particular project.
Please continue.
Page 69. Again, this is for spending authority only. This is the Wyoming Territorial Prison, and again, the State Parks and Historical Sites is seeking authorization to expend the revenue collected at the Wyoming Territorial Park from the sale of entrance permits. The SBC and the governor both recommend approval of this request for $210,000.
Please continue.
The next is water-related facilities. Again, this is for spending authority only. This is Division of the State Parks and Historical Sites. There's at requesting the authority to spend $770,000 of 1220 special revenue funding. Both the SBC and the governor recommend approval of this spending authority. And, Mr. Chairman, that then completes the capital construction requests. I don't know, Mr. Chairman, if you wanted to move on to work at the Wyoming State Penitentiary. That was in the handout from yesterday. And that was number, handout number 8. And that begins on page 9 in the book that we worked off of yesterday.
Mr. Chairman, could we go back real quickly? Could we go back real quickly to the...
Sure.
In your capital construction booklet on page 61, 62, that life resource building, do you have a payout on that for the DFS building based on what they're currently renting to this construction?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, that's 26 years.
All right, we're going to... the penitentiary's got some controversy to it. So we're going to take about a 10-minute break, and the members of the committee are going to go get their sandwiches. So I'd hope you don't mind us eating while
That's
you're
fine.
Doing the presentation. Call the meeting back to order. Del McCombie.
The on page 10 of the handout, again, that we went through yesterday, there's three pages that detail our budget ask for to complete the ongoing work for WJE. These three sheets came out of the information that we provided to the committee a couple, 3 weeks ago. There isn't any changes on those. So, Ms. Chairman, do you want me to just run down through each one of them quickly, or how do you want to handle
let's
this?
Let's do that while we're and we may have to interrupt you for questions. But
okay. The first one is for $1.25 million. This is the anticipated estimate to complete the remaining work around the south facility and the courtyards. We currently right now are under contract to pour the courtyards, the two interior courtyards. We're also currently doing work around the south facility, starting over towards the industrial center, and so we're working around the edge of that building, but there isn't enough dollars to complete going all the way around and finish the additional grading and stuff that needs to be done. The next item, I'm going to skip number 2 here, and we'll go down because that's part of the last item that we'll talk about. So the third paragraph down on page 10 is to perform masonry repairs in limited locations where the distress is significant. Removal of temporary corridor column outside the F electrical room, and then make permanent repairs to the walls in that F electrical room. That's not the new building, but that's inside the prison. And then repairs to the damaged wall and remove that column. That's $400,000.
So is the new modular unit in yet?
Yes, it's in place, has been there for a couple, 3 or 4 weeks, and they're running the conduit, and I don't know if they're complete with that yet.
No.
Not yet.
January, February time frame.
January time frame, I guess, to get that completed.
Okay.
The next item is $50,000. That's to repair the masonry cracking throughout the facility where there's non-structural supported walls. We're looking at just doing some repointing and then using the appropriate sealants for that. Some of those cracks, as you've seen, are fairly large, so we'll need some backer rods, backer rod behind that sealant when we go in and do that work. That's estimated to be about $50,000 over the next biennium. On the next page, page 11, we're going to do localized slab-on-grade repairs in the south facility at selected areas. This can consist of both some mud jacking, grouting with polyurethane, and slab-on-grade repairs where you're just going to go ahead and level that out where it's sunk in some of those locations. Again, based on the WJE report, that's $132,125. The next item, we'll go ahead and skip. There's no additional cost for this work. That's just basically the surveying and snow surveys, those sort of things that one of our consultants is doing on site. That's already budgeted for. The final item at the bottom of page 11 is $75,000 request. That's for estimate for the joint sealant. And so except where the deteriorated control joint sealants on the exterior side of the building, if you recall, we had some costs on the previous page, that was interior work, may affect the performance of the overall building envelope. All minor and non-structural and cosmetic repairs, including minor damage to non-load-bearing masonry walls, discussed in item four, can be postponed until a later date, and that was in their report. Looking at that work getting done, having reviewed that, the request is for $75,000.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director, I'm sorry, I'm not terribly construction-minded. Could you just clarify for me the difference between the ceiling on the bottom of page 10 and the ceiling on the bottom of page 11?
One's that the earlier on the discussion on page 10 was interior walls, so the interior of the building. The discussion on page 11 is exterior part of the building. And if you go to page 12, the WJE report recommended that we implement a snow management plan to ensure that the snow is plowed and not kept up against the building. As part of that review, we worked with the Wyoming Department of Transportation and their snow team to look at a snow fence study. That's currently underway, and based on their preliminary estimates, we're looking at about $143,000 to place snow fence. This is primarily outside the fence perimeter of the prison, and then they also recommended a few shorter fences within the prison facility, but WSP was going to install those within that perimeter themselves and may have already got that work done. It was a couple, 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I reviewed that with the YDOT team at the prison itself. So, again, to place that snow fence, and I think this truly will make a big difference in the amount of snow that's going to get up against that building, particularly on that south facility and the area where we've seen a lot of that failure and where they're currently working with the concrete right now. Then the other item that was in the WJE report was to establish a realistic future budget for maintenance and localized repairs. And again, based on what WJE had in their report and in working with our consultants, our estimate is for $2.9 million for these repairs. And then finally, for the State Construction Department's on-site manager, Todd, $234,000 for the next biennium. We currently have his salary funded through the end of this fiscal year, and so this would be for the next biennium. So the total request is a little bit under $5.2 million, so $5,184,125. Mr. Chairman, take any questions you might have.
Questions?
Mr. Co-Chair, could you provide us a breakdown of the 2.9 that you're requesting so we know what you're asking, what it's for?
We can do that.
I wanted to ask you about, with the new on-site manager, he had some discussions that we heard recently about the way that they were mopping the kitchen and the in those areas were substantially adding to the water that's going down underneath. Is he addressing that? Are we changing the processes? What are we doing?
Mr. Chairman, that is one of the and probably from my perspective one of the more important things even above the construction oversight that that Todd's doing there is to, based on his experience in the past at managing facilities, is to help work with the Department of Corrections and wherever we can change how we're doing business as far as the routine maintenance of that building is to try and make those improvements. So, yes, those discussions are happening.
So, would you, Mr. Co-Chair, would you put those in the weekly reports on what he's finding and what is being implemented to do it and be specific about it?
Mr. Chairman, we can certainly do that.
Representative Schwartz had his hand up first. No, Representative Larson.
I withdrew my
question. With your permission, Mr. Chairman, the Dale, could you just couple of questions on the additional pipe breakage that you found? My understanding is that's gray water, but I was unclear as to whether those lines were under structures or if they were out in the courtyard or maybe both. Do we know how long they've been broken, and would we venture to guess what was the cause of the breaking?
Mr. Chairman, I'll have Mr. Webb talk a little more in detail, but both of those breaks, the piping occurred within the building. I do know that one of the breaks, in the break itself ended up being outside of the building, so I think it was 40, 50 feet from where the drain was in the building, but then the break was actually on the exterior. I believe the break on the other one is interior to the building itself.
Mr. Chairman, Dave Webb, Construction Management. So the pipe breakage, we did find one pipe breakage right at the grade beam. It was separation caused by a little movement. You can see actually in the photo where the pipe difference, the differential in the outgoing pipe and the pipe it was connected to, there was a significant drop. We think it's an inch or more. We're in the process of repairing that now. The other pipe was just separated. They had put a collar on, and the collar was separated, so that was repaired. It's about a 3-hour fix for us, so we did repair both. We're in the process of repairing one, and we have repaired the other one. The gray water issue that we had at the kitchen area, we still are unsure if that exactly was just the issue with the pipe or if we had some other issues there. We're in the process of replacing the dish tank through major maintenance with Mr. Keys. And we are also doing maintenance along the wall. We're replacing all the caulking and backer rod with new caulking to make sure we're not getting infiltration through the slab and the grade beam there.
Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Questions? Anything else?
That's it.
Thank you.
Mr. Webb, give him an update on the roof. We do have two different folks that are looking at the roof. So,
Mr. Chairman, Dave Webb, Construction Management. I haven't got an update from the company yet. The company is Firestone. They hired Bighorn to come out and evaluate our roof system. We haven't got that completed. We're not totally complete with that yet, so we don't have a report. We have found water underneath the insulation between the decking and the insulation, so in spots. But that could be from numerous leaks, or it could be from a failed roof. We just don't know yet. So in my opinion, it'll be another month before we get that report to us.
Senator Landon.
Just real quickly, Dave, this afternoon we've heard from two different entities that have had issues with infrastructure underneath buildings, and I guess I'm trying to get my arms around long-term maintenance strategies. And doesn't that include things like roofs and piping and maybe it doesn't. I mean, the piping, I can understand that not everybody goes down and scopes those pipes. But at the first indication of some issue, isn't that something that should be folded into a major maintenance program over a 30-year period of time? Or can maybe comment on that for me?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Landon, in my opinion, there should be a maintenance plan for everything. I mean, I come from a military background. We do plan for just about everything we do. There's some sort of plan. With that said, I haven't seen what their plan was or has been. I can only go on what we've done so far, and we have done those things. We're scoping. We're looking at the roof. We're scoping the drains. We're getting with structural and mechanical and all the engineering and stuff to get this put back the way it should have been, and keep it together for the next 15 to 20 years.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I've got a question on about on these military, the pass-throughs of the federal government, and we're supposed to be paying, once it's built, we're supposed to be paying 50% of the maintenance. Is that the current situation up in Guernsey right now? Is the state paying for half of the maintenance on all those buildings?
Mr. Chairman, Dave Webb, Construction Management. Okay, so military major maintenance or military maintenance. Military maintenance is funded. It depends on who owns the land and how the building was funded. So if you have 100% federal building on 100% federal land, it's 100% federally funded for operations. On state land, you can have a federal building on state land, and it can be anywhere from 75-25, where it's 75% federal, 25% state, or 50-50 match, or the other way around. It depends on the use of the facility and how it's coded through the National Guard Bureau and the state of Wyoming.
Well, let's say Guernsey.
Guernsey is state land, and so if we have a federal building on state land, it just depends on the use and the coding. So that would be a military department issue or a question for them. I can't tell you what they coded their buildings and stuff. I've been gone for a couple of years, but they could provide you with that documentation.
Thank you, Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Webb, the majority of these issues you're finding at the prison were these contractor issues or maintenance issues after it was built? You know, we've kind of got both, and I'm sure it's some of both, but what's the majority cause on this? Is it because we did a poor job of maintaining, or did we get robbed by contractors?
Mr. Chairman.
And name names.
Senator Driscoll. I really don't want to put my opinion out there, but there's a little both. I mean, there's some of both. So we do have building movement. We've seen that. It's been documented. And we do have some construction issues that we've dealt with. So saying it's one or the other, I just want to get it fixed.
Mr. Chairman, we want to get it fixed in April.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Just a reminder, so the boilers that were running on a spare boiler or a rental boiler for $40,000 or something. And then is that going to be a major maintenance fix? Because I'm trying to remember on that. And then if the roof is a failure, we get no money or we get very little money, that will or will not be on a major maintenance. So how will all of that impact the $5 million biennium, and as it relates to roof and boiler? And then I want to hear an explanation of why, from somebody, and then maybe it's from corrections, of why the RO system was turned off on that boiler.
Mr. Chairman, yes, to the first question on the boilers, we're planning on using major maintenance funding to replace the boilers and the piping that's associated with that. In regard to the roof, there is still a slight amount of warranty left. I believe there's 1 year of warranty, and it's a prorated. So if we go into work on the roof, we may, depending on what they find and what the circumstances are for the failure, get some reimbursement, although it's going to be small from the manufacturer. The roof itself, the estimate that WJE had, if we have to replace those roofs, was, I believe, $6.5 million. That is more money than what the Department of Corrections would have available to be able to do that. So the discussion we had on the community college, we'd probably come in and ask for a supplemental request to replace that roof, similar to what we do in the schools with the component project.
Representative Wilson? Oh, okay. Any other questions? Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director McComey or Mel or somebody, have you folks gone out and visited any of our other correction institutions based on the condition that every week we seem to overturn another rock here and see a problem in Rawlins? I'm really quite concerned about the overall maintenance program of all of our correction facilities, and so I'd like to know if you guys have reviewed some of their practices and what they're looking like.
Mr. Chairman, Co-Chairman, Representative Walters, we have done that. Periodically, I know I have, and Director McComey has started to go around and look at other DOC facilities. Over the last few years, I've probably been to all of the facilities a couple of times, and what I will tell you I think I see, and I'm a guy that has a facilities background also in maintenance and how you maintain facilities, and I think as a general statement, and again, this is my opinion, as a general statement, I think Department of Corrections does a fair job of managing their facilities from a maintenance standpoint. Now, I say that when I say fair, I'm not being critical. I'm saying just like most state facilities, they're starting to age out now. And when facilities start to age out, you start to see some of these things happen. But I can give you a few examples of where I think using the AIM system that school facility uses now, DOC has that system within DOC system. It's not as robust as we're getting ready to set up for general services now, but I think once we get everybody aligned to that program and start using a Syria CMMS system, which is a maintenance management system, pretty universal around the country these days for industries that have large facilities, they really will help you walk through your daily maintenance, your monthly maintenance, your annual maintenance requirements, where it literally, once you put that information into the system, and an example of that would be if I have a generator, I know when that generator is due for maintenance. I know when the batteries should be checked. I know when it should get an overhaul. I know when we should change the spark plugs in it. The system will house that information and literally tell the maintenance technician when they need to go do that work. If you follow that model, you can extend the life of any piece of equipment or any facility for years. I mean, to your point, and I think to the comment Representative Summers made about the boilers, I have never been anywhere where large boiler systems fail in 10 or 15 years. It just doesn't happen. I don't care what anybody says. That's not normal. Usually what happens is it's something has failed. Something within the system has failed. Either the water treatment system has failed, either the maintenance has failed on how they manage those systems, or either in a lot of cases what we're seeing in some facilities are the control systems aren't working properly. And so to that, Director McComey has talked about, and I think we're going to provide a paper for that, where we'll talk about what we suggest should happen with some of the maintenance. And one of the things he's talking about, and I know he's mentioned this before, is getting a team of people that go out at the state level and go to all these facilities and look at, maybe get two serious boiler technicians to go out and look at all of our state boilers periodically throughout the year to help maintain or to at least help the technicians who are on site, the facilities people on site, manage those. Have maybe two electricians, master electricians, that go out and help with some of these systems. And the same thing with and mechanical systems are really the systems that fail in buildings, not so much the structures themselves. So I would tell you, to answer your question in a long way, I think the facilities are in pretty decent position, but I think they're all heading down the same path slowly unless we get an automated maintenance management system around the state that can help people manage their facilities.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hester.
So, Mel, would it be fair to say that you feel that by performing routine maintenance and preventative maintenance, that you spend a little now but save a lot in the long run, and it really helps enhance or cuts down the long-term cost?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hester, absolutely. In the world of facilities management, maintenance, preventive maintenance. I mean, that's why that word's called preventive maintenance. If you put that money up front, you can extend the life of any piece of equipment or your facilities without a doubt. But there's a cost associated with it. And just like we did this year, we put in, I believe it's $100,000 or something like that for our AIM program. That's paramount to setting this up. Now, around the state, at some point, as we start to maybe help design this process, there will be an ask to help push this out to other state agencies, Department of Health, to some of the other outlying larger facilities like health and others to get on the same program so that we're all doing this the same way.
Anyone else? Any other questions? Would we like to wait for Senator Burke? I've read for Senator Burkhardt to come back, see if he had a question.
No.
Thank you very much. Don, what else we got?
Mr. Chairman, I have several quick announcements, if I might.
Sure.
The first is, after discussions with the Budget Division, you can expect a governor's letter for the presentation that you just heard. Right now, there is no request for this body to act on. Secondly, when you do get to the state capital construction bill, when we do markup in this committee does markup in January, you will expect can expect one additional item on here that appeared in the agency's request. That is the University of Wyoming. Their request is to release funds, but it's a releasement of funds for a capital construction project, so it will appear in this same bill. Next, the committee is scheduled to meet for 2 weeks in January, beginning on January 8th. The positive is you have already heard from 100% of the requests from state school construction, 99% of school foundation payments, and over 80% of all general fund requests. So you've made extraordinary progress in terms of the agencies that you've looked at. You will be challenged, however, in terms of timing, especially for bills. Right now, I believe we have 24 bills for this committee for consideration. That is to say a couple of them may fall off, and a couple others might be combined into a single bill. In addition, the agencies have already started to respond to questions and follow-ups. We've gotten several just this morning. We will post those on SharePoint, and they can be found in two places, one in the agency handouts folder, number two on the day that they presented originally. So if you wanted to go to see what the governor's follow-up was, you can go to the governor presentation on Monday 2 weeks ago.
Is there a list of the bills, of the proposed bills?
No, not at this point for the public, unfortunately. I would say
on SharePoint.
No, about at least a third. The member has not released it, so that's the concern we have.
Okay.
We can compile the JAC
request. Yes, Mr. Chairman, we can, and I will actually email this out next week. The JAC bills that have publicly been released, we will do that, and we will also
So, Don, when you say the 24 bills, you're talking about combined of JAC plus individual members?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, although we've received at least some indication that the member intends to bring that for the committee to sponsor it.
How many of those are mine?
Several.
22 of them.
So, Mr. Chairman, so are you waiting on anything from
not at this time, no, Mr. Chairman. And we will put a list out there. We will also work. I've communicated with the legal staff, and we will work to post all of these upon the chair's approval prior to the January 8th meeting. Nevertheless, the reason I bring this up is we will probably break this out into a couple of different days when we have some additional time to pick up a couple of bills at a time, hopefully in a similar subject matter area. Mr. Chairman, that's all I have. Thank you.
Anything else for the good of the order?
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. We are adjourned until January 8th.